Mount San Antonio College regular meeting of Board of Trustees, March 9, 2016, Wednesday, now start. Renee, would you please help us with the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
The following newly appointed and promoted employees, started with classified employees, newly appointed. I know Elizabeth Callahan is not here. How about Marissa Figueroa? Is this, all right, come up, please. It's the admission and record specialist three.
Yes. Yes, my name is Marizar Figueroa. I've been hired in admission and records as a graduation evaluator. I received my Bachelor of Arts in Communication from Cal State Fullerton. I did start my college career here at Mount SAC, so I'm very happy that I'm back here. Previously, I worked at Cal State Long Beach. I was there for 8 years as an evaluator. In the last 2 years, I was the academic advising analyst. But most of all, I'm very excited that I'm here. But I would like to thank, of course, Dr. Yamagata Nuji for hiring me and giving me this wonderful opportunity. And I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you.
Welcome. Next is Lizette Henderson. Also, admission specialist three, natural science.
I feel like I'm before a committee hearing. This is. Oh, so do you ask me questions or I just start?
Okay. Just tell us a little bit about you.
Okay. My name's Lizette Henderson. I am the new Administrative Specialist 3 with the Natural Science Division. I have the great pleasure of working with Dean Matt Judd and Associate Dean Carolyn Hoover and the support staff there as well. I come from a political background, so I come from the California State Legislature. My previous employment included working with Speaker of Emeritus John A. Perez in the now 53rd District. And then after him, I worked with Assemblymember Chris Holden in the 41st Assembly District, which covered most of the San Gabriel Valley into portions of the San Bernardino Valley.
So. Thank you. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Nadine Hernandez, EOPS, Student Service Program. No?
I don't think she can make it.
Okay. Maybe next month, huh? Marlene? Is that the instructor for administrative service specialist? Lanuza.
Hi. My name is Marlene Lanuza. I was... I'm the new Administrative Specialist 3 with the Instructions Office. I have an AA in Child Development, a BA in Human Development, and a Master's in Leadership and Organizational Studies. I actually started off coming to Mount SAC. I came from 2001 to 2006, and I finished my general ed and most of my child development classes here and actually was on the dean's list. I came from Baldwin Park Unified School District. I was employed with them for 14 years. Started off as an instructional aide. Then I moved to teaching and for the early childhood education department. And then I left as a family service facilitator, where I worked with grants, and I worked with the director. So a lot of experience with working with the community and, you know, families and things like that. And I just want to thank everyone for the opportunity that they're giving me to be here, and I look forward to making a positive impact with the college. And so thank you very much.
Hello, and thank you for having me here. My name is Venice McCurdy. I'm your new lab technician for the arts department. I have an AA in behavioral science, a BFA in sculpture, and a MFA in sculpture and performance. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me. A little bit about my work background. I have been a lab technician at Claremont High School. I have also been a lab technician at Cal State Fullerton, and I have been a lab technician at Claremont Graduate University as well. Thank you very much.
Is Cynthia here for our high school outreach? Oh, here. Welcome.
And I didn't earlier. All right, well, hello again. My name is Cynthia Rosco. I'll be working with the high school outreach. So my educational background, I actually started here in Mount SAC, 2010, very recent, came from Baldwin Park High School. Was here for 3 years, was a Bridge student, heavily involved with the Bridge program, transferred over to UCLA, 2013, where I just graduated 2015 with my BA in sociology. I love learning about societies. I love working with people and students. I actually was a peer advisor here through the Bridge program for a year and a half. Got to work with Summer Bridge, so incoming first-year students, and helping them into that transition to Mount SAC. Later at UCLA, I continued to be a peer mentor with students. I was a peer advisor, well, an educational peer counselor for the Academic Advancement Program, which works primarily with underrepresented communities at UCLA. So I love, 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 love working with those communities because they're like me. I'm so excited to be back and continue to do outreach to those communities. And I actually work primarily right now with the La Puente Hacienda School District and some Pomona schools, so very much like BP where I'm from. So I'm very excited. So thank you for this opportunity.
Next person, Lloyd. The equipment technician, architecture, industrial design, engineering, and manufacturing.
Thank you. My name is Lloyd Robinette. I take care of the equipment over at the industrial design and manufacturing area. My background is more than 35 years of design, manufacturing, fabrication, and business with various people around the world. I've been CEO of several different corporations, including some foreign ones. My specialty is very sophisticated equipment, and currently I will be taking care of about $500,000 worth of your equipment here on campus. Everything from CNC machining equipment to lasers, 3D printers, just about everything you could imagine and that you've seen on TV and you've seen in the movies. I'll be working on that. And this is probably the cleanest you'll ever see me because I'll normally be under grease or sawdust or whatever. If you come over to see the shop, you'll get to see all this wonderful equipment. Thank you for the opportunity.
Welcome. Astrid Rodriguez, laboratory technician, theater.
Hi, I work for the theater department, building the scenic sets for the plays. I also am the master electrician there when it comes to the plays. I studied theater for about a year, and then I got hired as a student assistant. And worked as a student assistant for the theater department for about 3 years, and then I got hired into a position. Currently, I'm studying as an engineer, mechanical engineer, And thanks to all the experience I've had with theater, I've been able to understand concepts and mechanisms and everything in my engineering field and study.
Thank you. Welcome.
We have one classified employee promoted, and I don't think Olga is here, Castillo, so she'll be here next month, the public safety officer. So recognition, these are wonderful professors who is have received tenure last month. So we start with Christopher Briggs. Biological sciences.
Good evening. I'm Chris Briggs, and I've been teaching general biology and microbiology here. My background is from UC Berkeley and UC Riverside, and I taught for a short time at Chaffey College also. And in thinking about something to say tonight, I was confronted with the yin and yang of the situation. I'm being given the marvelous opportunity to innovate in the classroom, to speak truth to power, and to advocate for education more or less indefinitely here. But on the other hand, I have never worked so hard. I've dedicated some of my energy to work groups on campus, trying to broaden our conversations about long-term sustainability, about resource use, transportation, equality. One thing I've been working on is with the LA County Board of Supervisors to try to improve Temple Avenue between here and Cal Poly Pomona so that students on bikes, students on foot, or even students on wheelchairs could get between campuses. I've also innovated in the classroom. Each semester brings something different. There's always something new going on. And so I really appreciate the chance to have a stable platform from which to continue my involvement with all of these marvelous students and colleagues. It's been a tremendous 4 years, and I look forward to the next 40 or 50. Thank you.
All right, Todd Clements, chemistry. Todd?
Hello, I'm Todd Clements. I'm in the chemistry department, and I got my bachelor's at Harvey Mudd, went on to my graduate work at UC San Diego. And I got the opportunity, just like Dr. Scroggins here, to teach at Harvey Mudd for a couple years. That was a really wonderful opportunity. And then I came to Mount SAC. I've had a really wonderful time here. It's been really enjoyable to teach all the different classes and teach students, some of whom have never seen this stuff before in their lives. And I think that's some of the most fun, is to introduce them to this and get them maybe a tiny bit excited about chemistry. Some of them it's hard to get excited at all, but that's okay. I know, I don't understand. Okay. A couple things that stand out to me of my experience here in this past 4 years has been, I have five children now, and so in the 4 years I've been here, my family has grown by two, so I went from three to five. And the college has been so supportive of me, and I just really want to thank all of you for having an environment that's really supportive of my family and my life. And the other thing I want to thank you for is all the support you've given to the chemistry department and how we've been able to grow. I no longer have 40 students standing in the back of my class trying to get into my 28-person class, and that's really a nice thing. So thank you for supporting the chemistry department, and I look forward to many more years of fun. Thank you.
Okay, Jamaica Fowler, counseling articulation officer.
Well, obviously I'm not Jamaica Fowler, but I wanted to be here on behalf of Jamaica to let you know, too, that she wishes she could be here tonight. Her son was hit by a car in October and suffered serious injuries, including head trauma. So she has been off campus with him since October. She's back, actually, as of March 1st, 2 days a week. She covers Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, and the weekends, and her husband covers Tuesdays and Thursdays. So she needs to be with her son still, who's in recovery. And he's making improvements, slowly getting his memory back, and he's actually being homeschooled. He attends West Covina High School, but he's on the road to recovery slowly. But anyway, she couldn't be here tonight, and I wanted to
let you guys know why, that she didn't take this lightly or anything like that, but need to be with her son. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Jeremy Hart, counseling.
Good evening. My name is Jeremy Hart. I work in general counseling. I also work with the Aspire program and the Bridge program. I'm currently in the second year of my doctoral program at USC, and the main reason why I decided to go back to school was to inspire students here at Mount SAC and wherever I go to let them know that education is possible, even from someone from Gardena or Los Angeles or Pomona, that if you put forth the effort, anything is possible. And that's what I really am thankful for, this opportunity to be a counselor at a college, because so many of the students of color look at me as if I don't exist, and we have to change that. And that is the greatest gift that I'm able to give every day to our students here at Mount SAC. So I'd just like to thank the board and Dr. Yamagata Noji and my dean for giving me the opportunity to serve the students here at Mount SAC. Thank you.
Thank you. Jamie Hirsch, Fire Technology. Jamie.
Good evening.
Good evening.
It feels good to have tenure. I'm not going to lie, it feels really good. Yay! It's a rigorous process, but you know what? It's a really good process, and it vets out those that are really serious about education and those that aren't. So I feel very privileged to be here at Mount SAC. I've had nothing but support from the dean on down to new, you know, adjunct employees. So I currently teach in the core classes, and I'm the assistant chief for the Fire Academy, so I have to be, you know, hard and steadfast at the academy, but I really enjoy interacting with the students. I came up through the fire service, started as a firefighter, and I retired as a deputy chief. So that wasn't easy, but I think it paved the way for women to try and get into the fire service now. So I'm very proud of that, and I'm especially proud to be here at Mount SAC. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Stephen James, in industrial design. Stephen.
Hi, I'm Stephen James. I'm a faculty, now tenured faculty as of today, I guess, and in the industrial design engineering and department, and also kind of helping with the manufacturing department right now while we're missing a faculty. So I have a degree in art and design from Cal State Northridge, and I attended Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, and also Mount San Jacinto College, community college in San Jacinto, California. And I am ecstatic at being now part of the community college system. It's a dream come true for sure. And like my colleagues are saying, I'm ecstatic to be here, and it's really great. So I've helped to build the industrial design engineering program from the beginning with the eternal support of Gemma Judd, our dean, current dean, and Sarah Dom, the previous dean, and our Sarah Plezitz, our new associate dean, has been instrumental. So they've worked really hard with us to build this program, and it's new, but it's flourishing and blossoming, and it's really exciting. And I pinch myself every day to be part of it, and I look forward to coming here. It's one of the hardest things I've ever done. I've worked 25 years in industrial design and design engineering fields, and those were very hard jobs and very stressful jobs. And this, I joke with my wife that I thought when I came here I could, you know, slow down a little bit. it's been the opposite, okay? But I love every day, and I love being here, and I appreciate everybody here that's helped us in our you know, time building this program. So thanks again very much.
Is Melissa here? Melissa Macias? No? Okay, so Clark. But no? Athletics.
He's got a basketball team.
Ah, okay.
Hello, everyone. I think I echo what she just said. I thought basketball was tough, playing in a tough conference game, but going through the tenure process was a humbling experience. I I really found out what I was made of. I'd like to start off by just saying thank you to my athletic director. Joe Gentle's been 100% supportive of everything I've done. You know, whether it's been in the classroom, on the court, very, very good. I'd like to thank you, Dr. Scroggins, first year, bringing me in and kind of letting me know I have support from also at the top. And Dr. Malmgren, since you've been here, I appreciate the support. But this is my second time around. I'm over the top happy to be finally official. Great time to be a Mountie. Go Mounties.
Jane, is she here? Learning assistant.
Good evening. I'm Jane Azell, and it's a pleasure to be here tonight. I was hired 9 years ago in the learning assistance department, teaching writing. And I'm still teaching writing there now. That department has become my home away from home in the last 9 years, and it's filled with wonderful educators who have made a huge difference. I watch the impact that they have on students because they genuinely care, and they support each other in that, so it's wonderful. I'm also proud to be part of the Library and Learning Resources Division, headed by our fabulous Megan Chen, who supports our faculty the way we support our students. Mount SAC has just been a wonderful experience for me. I think that we're a fabulous campus and that we do things excellently. And in the last 2 years, I've had the opportunity to be a part of committees on campus that the Faculty Professional Development Committee, Student Equity, and the Professional Development Council. And that has given me a broader perspective of the work that is done here on campus. And I'm very thankful for our shared governance process. And I think that it's one of the things really that sets us apart. And I'm very thankful to be here. Very proud to be a part of Mount SAC. I love what I do. I love the campus and our community. And thank you all for your support.
Is Serena Art here, foreign language? No? Okay, so next one, Eloise Reyes, counseling.
Hello and good evening. Thank you. Hello and good evening. I am a counselor in DSPNS, and I want to take this opportunity to thank the board, Dr. Yamagata Noji, and my Dean Grace Hansen for being here and being at such a fine, lovely institution. It's truly an honor and a pleasure to be here on a daily basis doing what I love, and that's serving our students here at Mount SAC with various disabilities. I love what I do. I love helping students succeed and achieve their goals, and I look forward to continuing to do my very best in serving our fine institution. I thank you very much.
All right, William Roche, computer information system.
He's out ill today.
Not here?
He's out ill today.
Oh. Diane Rowley, learning assistance.
My name is Diane Rowley, and I teach in the Learning Assistance Center, and my specialty is reading and writing classes. And I wanted to thank the board and Dr. Scroggins and Dr. Malmgren and my wonderful Dean Megan Chen for allowing me the opportunity to be a permanent part of this wonderful community. I was a part-time adjunct here at Mount SAC for 9 years before I was hired full-time. And before that, I was a K-12 person. I worked in a continuation high school with at-risk students. When I came to Mount SAC and I went into the learning assistant, the classrooms are very well equipped and very supportive to learning. There's student computers and smart boards. And when I first started 13 years ago, there were even teaching assistants. So I came here and I thought, oh my goodness, it's like teaching on a cruise ship. There's so many resources for students. This is fabulous. And then the longer I worked here, the more I found Mount SEC has a reputation for their rigorous academic programs and supporting students. And I thought, this is a privilege to be a part of this. When I finally found out, I got the email that I'd been tenured. The room started to spin, and I thought, okay, this is it. This is what I've been working for. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Cecilia Fay, Child Development.
Well, at least it wasn't Gilligan's Isle.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is Cecilia Day from Child Development Department. I want to thank the board, the president, the vice president, and my lovely dean, the previous dean, the existing dean, associate dean, for their support. This is a dream come true for me, and I love what I'm doing right now. I love teaching. I started teaching when I was two. No, not really. But previously, I worked at Riverside County Office of Education, and I also worked for West End Center for Child and Family Studies. And during that time, I also worked part-time here for 11 years before I'm hired full-time. So I am so blessed to be here, and I'm so blessed to be part of cutting-edge team, and I will try my best to be the best that I can for the college. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Congratulations to all of them. Next item, approval of minutes of the regular meeting of February 17, 2016. Backup packet, page 1 to 13. May I have a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, move by Dr. Baca, seconded by Trustee Bader. Any discussion? Hearing none. Student trustee?
I concur.
All right. Those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Opposed? Okay. The minutes approved. Public communication at this time, the Board of Trustees will listen to communication from the public on matters that are not on the agenda. Under the provision of the Brown Act, the Board is prohibited from discussing or taking action on all requests that are not part of the agenda. Comments are limited to no more than 3 minutes per person. And I have a card here. Is Alejandro Juarez?
Hello. Okay, because I know that earlier it wasn't on and they're in trouble. Okay. Well, hello. Good night to all of you. Well, it's good to be here back again and seeing all of you. My name is Alejandro Xipecoa Juarez, and I am the Interclub Council co-chair, also a student ambassador, part of the MMI program. What I'm here to talk to you today is about gender and ethnic studies. Now, of my knowledge, I know that this is currently being talked about through Academic Senate and also having a conversation among some many groups. And I'm just here to talk in favor of the organizations and clubs that I represent. Many organizations and clubs inside ICC, inside Mount SAC, really support this movement, this educational reform inside. And one thing I just want to say to many students and to many people, it's something very new. A lot of people don't know about what gender and ethnic studies is. And what gender and ethnic studies is the interdisciplinary study of underrepresented groups in the United States. So that being African Americans, Latinos, Chicanos, Asian Americans, Native Americans, Middle Eastern, Muslim, whatever it may be. So why is this important? Because ethnic studies has not been taught to us in our elementary, middle school, high school, whatever it may be. And one thing I want to say is that I feel welcome, I feel blessed when there's these classes offered finally at a community college or an institution. Because throughout our elementary through high school, we weren't taught our story. We were taught his story. And we want to learn about our story or her story. So to many students feel many very passionate about this issue and about this this is going on. And one thing I want to share is just something that I wrote. Students of Mount San Antonio College understand that gender and ethnic studies is important to the education and future of students at Mount SAC. It raises consciousness inside our community and recognizes and celebrates Mount SAC's cultural diversity. It also teaches us to respect our own cultures and others. It creates leaders, activists, and critical thinkers. It offers a comparative and expansive understanding of our diverse global society. Collectively, courses in ethnic studies forge strong scholarly intellectual connections between the related fields of the Native, African American, Chicano, Asian American, and much more. Students learn how scholars in different fields, whether it be history, art, literature, communications, anthropology, education, political science, psychology, and sociology, approach the study and expression of race and ethnicity through an interdisciplinary search. So what I'm trying to say is that once it comes into the board, I hope that all of you support us, the students, and this is something that we really want, and we've been waiting for a long time. And basically that. And also, I just want to share that it made me very happy seeing all the new employees that are hired today. Many of them are from my community. Mr. Hart was someone that worked inside my high school, and I remember seeing him. And also, someone said that they worked inside the inside continuation, which is alternative education. Betty and I are part of that alternative education continuation, and that's nothing that I'm not afraid to share that. I take much pride from where we come from and what we've done today. So, without being said, thank you, and hopefully, you will support us in gender and ethnic studies.
Moving on to reports, associate students.
All right, greetings, members of the board. First, I'd like to congratulate the newly appointed, newly promoted, and newly tenured, except I think they all left, so it's just us now. Thank you, Alex, for everything. Appreciate it. And yeah, so Mountie Mondays, everyone. It's still going on. Please wear your Mountie colors / Mountie gear. We're trying to really push this Mountie pride. Let's lift that stigma off community colleges. Let's start with our own. NASPA conference, March 12th through the 16th. We have 4 students going to Indianapolis, Indiana. And we're basically sending a small delegation to NASPA to really see what they're about, to see if we want to continue to pursue this conference and just really learn everything we can. We also have an inspiring women luncheon March 29th. It's in honor of all the winning applicants, but also all the incredible women at Mount SAC. I see a lot in this room as we speak. So we have that. And then AS elections, April 4th to the 7th. It's going to be all day, Kerr's Corner, and online. Students can vote. We have elections coming up for our executive board. The positions include AS president, vice president, interclub council chair, and vice chair. Now they're co-chairs, which is great, equity, right? Trustee and also student senate chair positions. Now I will continue with my, statements. The students are excited to know that the Student Center Steering Committee / Design Committee is finally forming the week of March 21st. Our AS leaders are continuously informing and updating students on the Student Center progress, any information that is relevant. We're telling them at every single AS-sponsored event. We're currently compiling a list of ideas and suggestions that the students bring to us. We're also pursuing them and just telling them it's happening, everybody, hopefully sooner rather than later. But so that's great. As I mentioned at our last board meeting, our student leaders would like to ask that there be 2 more ongoing planning committees, the first for the student life staff, the second for the student center staff and AS leaders / student leaders and clubs and anybody that wants to be a part of that. We hope that they be a part of that focus group the week of April 4th, according to our HPI draft schedule. Lastly, I'm glad to be working on the water refill stations with Mr. Nelson and Mr. Sneed. That's all part of the water bottle initiative. I'm sure everybody remembers a few months ago, I should say. We're trying to get rid of disposable plastic on campus. It's important that Mount SAC becomes that catalyst in the community. We show other campuses how to do this. Eventually, our entire region becomes disposable plastic water bottle free. In 5 years, the state, 10 years, the country, 20 years, the world. That's our attempt at this. I'm thinking long term. We're utilizing institutional effectiveness, and we're hoping to definitely encourage long-term strategy and planning in associated students. Part of that is the water bottle refill stations. I really hope to get this accomplished by this semester, at least three. We're hoping to get one in front of Mountie Cafe by Starbucks, one south side of Building 6, the LAC, and then the other is going to be in front of Building 26. I'm pretty sure that one's going to be the most used. A lot of students were surprised during Join a Club that we have water bottle refill stations. Where? So we're hoping that these new stations really accommodate our student needs and just overall get some free water like we deserve. And that's all I really have. Like I said, it's been good. Join a Club. Alex and Fabian have been doing a great job. We have over 40 clubs attending this week, and it's just a lot of fun. It's great seeing the creativity of student leaders on campus and just seeing what clubs have to offer. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Academic Senate, Dan.
Good evening, everyone. We had our first meeting of the year since the last Board of Trustees meeting. We met on the 25th. And acting on several things, wanted to point out or highlight three of them. The first is our Resolution 1505, creating a CTE liaison position. It was passed unanimously, so I want to read the two resolves. We're creating the position and to be appointed to a two-year term by the Senate President and confirmed by the full Senate. The duties, responsibilities to attend meetings of the Senate, to provide reports to the Academic Senate as needed about statewide issues of concern in CTE, to identify local and regional CTE issues of concern, to communicate opportunities for CTE faculty to participate in statewide initiatives, which keeps growing, it seems, and the work groups, the task forces, and so forth, to attend as funding permits state-level events and regional consortium meetings and advise the Senate President and Exec Board on these issues. We passed Resolution 1507, support for department chair compensation by acclamation. And the resolves state that we recognize and support the ongoing efforts of department chairs to manage their workload while supporting student learning and success. And then resolve we strongly support the Mount SAC Faculty Association's efforts to secure compensation for department chairs that's proportional to and appropriate for their workload. And then we appointed four faculty to the newly created ACU PCC Implementation Committee, which I understand may change its name soon anyway. But part of this environmental initiative that the student president spoke of.
Sorry, catch up.
And the next meeting, we'll move forward as we look to elect a new president, vice president, and perhaps a new secretary. Two of the five director positions are open for election this year, and then two more of the five senator-at-large positions begin nomination process right after that. I want to add my congratulations to the 13 faculty members, the lucky 13 who've earned their tenure. I don't think we lost anyone in that class. They all came through the process. Obviously a milestone in their career which validates their hard work. And the great variety of teaching disciplines. It's always nice to see how wide of a net we spread in trying to educate a great variety of areas. Many of these newly tenured professors are on as many as three committees at a time. As Christopher Briggs intimated, you get here and you want to get involved. And so we find faculty almost spontaneously building bridges, learning about the rest of the campus, working with others across campus. Tonight, your agenda also has three more counseling faculty members, which helps reduce the overall ratio of students to counselors and allowing us to better serve our students in pursuit of their education. And also, the hiring continues. Thankful that we have money to hire more professors, and I'm working closely with HR and the hiring committees to facilitate this process. So we hope to celebrate more and have a great variety of areas in which to serve our students. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Classified Senate, John.
Hello, everyone. You have the most exciting collection of paperwork here tonight. I have to say you're very lucky. The great staff task force is happy to report that the application process for classified to apply to be considered for the great staff retreat has closed, and there were a total of 49 applicants. 36 were selected. Most of those were and are going to be first-time attendees. with a really good mix of gender and office and departments across campus. So a good, you know, selection. It worked out really well so far. And they're moving ahead with their planning for the workshops. But it is going well. And I think everyone's getting excited. In this packet, nominations for, believe it or not, in just 2 months coming up, is the Excellent Awards put on by Classified Senate. We call them the Classies, much like the Oscars, but here it's the Classies. And I've attached, for your convenience, not only a real short synopsis of the criteria for each of the categories, I've also attached a blank nomination form, which you can Xerox and nominate as many as you want, and a little explanation flyer on the back. The website I have on my report, there in the blue, it semi-works, but the forms will be available in a few days. I'm working with IT. You know, we changed everything over, and so forms have to be recreated, but you have one attached. And I want to remind people that management, board members, faculty, literally everyone can nominate an outstanding classified employee. So it's I encourage you to do so. The 15th annual Pint Challenge Blood Drive is happening this coming Tuesday. That's March 15th. I mentioned this last time. It was started that many years ago by now retired professor Dave Schmidt in honor of his daughter. So it's an important thing, and Classified Senate is really helping, trying to get people to sign up. That's the most important thing, is to go online and sign up, but you can give that day if you spontaneously feel you want to do so. Finally, Classified Professional Development Committee, CPDC, has selected a date for what right now we're calling our flex-like day for classified employees. It's August 12th. And it will be a release time training day for all classified. So we're going to work out those details. And we will be presenting a day-long series of workshops that will target things that classified through surveys have said they really, really need and are really interested in. And those are leadership skills, communication skills, career advancement paths and training, as well as technology training. So that will be moving ahead, and you'll be hearing more about it. But everybody's excited to get that going. And that's my report.
Thank you, John. Faculty Association, Eric.
Well, good evening. As you can probably see, my beard is in post, putting on the hits mode. It takes a little while for it to regrow, but I'm working on it. First up, we have 2016-17 negotiations. We are still largely in data collection and early stages. In fact, our fourth negotiation session is scheduled for tomorrow. And I thought you might be interested to know that grievance procedures, lab parity, the rights of the association and its members, and evaluation forms happen to be the topics on the agenda. And I accidentally brought my proposal, one of my proposals for tomorrow, with me. The representative council, although it did hold its meeting last week, it postponed the resolution of concern regarding a campus police department. The faculty present wished to have further information before expressing an opinion, and I have requested further information, and I hope to have something to bring to them to their April meeting. Also, the FA did open nominations for their 2016-17 elections. There are a great many positions up, but mine is not one of them. It's a two-year term, so you will be seeing me at least one more year. Putting on the hits was remarkably successful. It's starting to get the feel, actually, when you're backstage of a family reunion, only it's with family members that you like. And although there are only two shows, we do believe a quick head count that we did manage to bring attendance up a bit from last year. So that is a good sign. We are still accepting donations on behalf of the Faculty Association Student Achievement Fund. And as you know, we do go ahead and give all the net proceeds to our students just prior to the foundation's event in June. On behalf of the Faculty Association, many thanks go out to Dr. Scroggins for the district's co-sponsorship, as well as for his personal support and encouragement. It was stories from his past Barbara Streisand days that motivated me this year. And for those managers, and we are trying to get more managers in the show, I can now say with great authority that I'm not going to ask you to do anything I wouldn't do myself.
The theater department doesn't have a pair of size 14 blue sequin shoes.
They found size 15 for me. The involvement of board members Manuel Baca, Roseanne Bader, Jay Chen, David Hall, and Robert Hildalco was deeply appreciated. It is very heartwarming to the faculty to see a quorum up on stage attempting to be Journey or something similar. We very much appreciate your participation and your support. Thank you to everyone who attended the shows and who donated to the scholarship fund. Now, I couldn't fit everything on one page, so we do have a page two if you turn things over. The executive board has voted to honor Professor Richard McGowan, who some of you may know. He's a former Academic Senate president, as well as a former Faculty Association treasurer who's bailed us out with his deep knowledge of all things IRS and the ability to write very, very good apologetic letters to them. So we are honoring him. It's a long story, but there was a time when we changed treasurers and discovered, oh, never mind. But anyhow, he is our local WHO recipient at the CCA WHO Awards and Spring Conference. This year, the Spring Conference and WHO Awards will be held on the 15th through 17th of April at the Costa Mesa Hilton. The award dinner happens to be the 16th of April. And Richard and one guest is invited.
Thank you.
Richard told me to keep it free. At this meeting, the delegates will also be voting for the Mount SAC director to CCA. That's a position I currently hold. So I sit on the CCA board. The president of CCA has a seat at Consultation Council, which advises the Board of Governors. Well, at the very least, the chancellor. Also, there are a number of spring events scheduled. We're going to have coffee with the FAA president at ungodly hours of the morning, but also at more reasonable hours, and we would encourage you to stop by. I'll be happy to buy you a cup of coffee. The Faculty Association will hold all open houses on the 19th and 20th of April. We're trying to encourage members to find out where we are because we're kind of tucked back in Building 23. Faculty Appreciation Week will be in early May. We don't have our schedule of events yet, but we are hoping to have some, and you are very welcome to attend. The Retirement Tenure Tea, one I particularly would appreciate you visiting, is here at Founders Hall on the 17th of May. That's when we will go ahead and again welcome the newly tenured, but also say goodbye to the faculty that are retiring. We haven't had very many in recent years. They seem to like working here. And then the Student Faculty Association Student Achievement Awards occur the same day, but in the morning, as the foundation event. Before I go ahead and step away, I would like to congratulate those newly hired classified and, of course, the newly tenured faculty. You know, it's always a delight seeing these guys get their feet under them and start to assist. Chris Briggs was helping backstage with putting on the hits over the weekend. Jane and Diane are both in my department, and we've greatly appreciated their expertise and their willingness to learn and become part of what we do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. CSEA 262, Bill.
Good evening, everyone. First, I'd like to start off with two congratulations, one for Faculty Association on putting on the hits. Unfortunately, like the past couple of years, I've been in Sacramento when we've been putting on the shows, so one of these days I'm actually going to be free and can either help or participate, and hopefully that day comes in the next year or two. I've been looking forward to it for a while. The other congratulations is to Audrey and her team. I'm always very pleased to help out in my area in the Library and Learning Technology Center with things like Cash for College and Connect4. They had a very successful Cash for College event. It went very smoothly. Her staff did a lot of outreach. We had a lot of employees across campus that came and volunteered. It was very educational for a lot of them. Most of them had not seen the type of outreach that we're doing with our students and trying to recruit them here. But then also, what efforts do student services put forth to try and make their transition here from high school here much easier and much more seamless? And they did just a really outstanding job, and they do every year. This year, I think we had probably, it seemed like more students than we've had in the past few years, but it definitely ran much smoother and had a lot more support. So I know that students were having to wait less time because we had volunteers from across campus, and then we were able to get them out quicker, and that helped us move students through. So I think that went very well. So good work with your team on that. Negotiations are going very well, I think. We've covered a lot of interesting ideas, had a lot of constructive dialogue, mostly along the lines of what we've been doing with great staff. We've been focusing some of our time on professional development, and there's a number of proposals that we've put forward for professional development. I think trying to incentivize classified employees to maintain their skill set or to improve. Also, an opportunity for them to gain skills that they haven't had and potentially make them eligible for positions that are higher than what they're currently doing. So I think we're trying to do what we can to incentivize them. It's hard to manage that when you've got a heavy workload and then you've got family life and trying to get that balanced. But we're trying to make it a little easier for managers to be able to approve them to participate in professional development and also making the professional development more appealing for them to attend. So there's a variety of topics we're addressing on that. Also public safety. I think we're at a point that we're heading in a good direction, kind of creating a roadmap that I think you'd all be able to see in the next few weeks. Hopefully we might be able to wrap that up tomorrow and then be able to share that out to the Faculty Association, the other constituent groups on campus, and kind of getting a better idea about what and why we're trying to do certain things within our bargaining unit itself, but also how we plan to serve the college through our public safety department here. And I think those discussions are going well. One other item that will be coming up in the near future, probably before the next board meeting, is going to be reclassifications and classification review. As you're all familiar with all the job descriptions we've been working through in the past, especially with Coffin Associates, that was very time-consuming and costly. I think there's ways that we can do it on campus with some of the expertise we have, and we'll be bringing that forward to the district in the next couple of weeks. But we want to create a system of maintaining accurate job descriptions moving forward. It's hopefully tomorrow, and it could move very quickly, actually, because I think we're pretty much on the same page. But we want to be able to keep these job descriptions up so that, an example, as you go and you have a recruitment for a position you take a look at it as a manager, you take a look at it, you see that there needs to be changes, and then being able to have that taken a look at within a couple of years, not a decade or more, but having it at least within, you know, maybe 5 years or so, have it up to date with the current needs and skill sets that you're asking for. And right now, at least not now, but prior to the Cuff study, we really had job descriptions that were up to 15 years old and completely out of date, and the technology no longer existed in some cases. And that made the cleanup that we've done much harder, much more complicated to do. Now that we're at this point where we have a good new baseline for our employees, we're looking at how do we maintain the work we put in, how do we maintain the effort and the money we've put into the job descriptions and making sure that we're recruiting the right people and therefore also meeting our accreditation standard on that front. Next up, May. It's the third full week in May. We have Classified School Employees Week. I wanted to put that on your radar. I think you're all familiar with it, and a lot of you attend the events. And so John Llewellyn is one of the folks that's helping lead the planning for that. So keep your ears open in future meetings and emails for the activities we have planned there. And then lastly, August 1st through 4th, if you can kind of put that on your radar as well, it is our CSEA annual conference. It will be held in San Jose this year. So that will be near our headquarters for CSEA. Typically, we try and invite some managers or board members to attend. And so I would be looking to have a discussion with my executive team on inviting one of the board members this year. And if any of you are available, then we're going to reach out to you and hopefully have some of you attend and see what the broader CSEA picture looks like. But that'll be San Jose, August 1st through 4th. It's also a great chance for us to get new up-and-coming leaders within our chapter who are used to seeing what Mount SAC does and how Mount SAC works and any of the issues and topics and negotiations we do here. But then when they go and they see 2,000 plus other delegates from 1,000 different school districts across the state, that makes a different impact on them. And they see really how education as a whole really tries to move in the same direction and learn a lot about the issues where we have common interests with other K-12 and community colleges across the state. And we also do a lot of training and professional development there as well. So that's always a great activity. So thank you all very much.
Thank you. CSEA 651, I don't see anyone here. Monksack Foundation.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to start tonight by taking a moment to acknowledge the passing of a great friend of Mount San Antonio College. Caroline Reynolds died on February 22nd. As some of you know, Caroline was the wife of one of our alums, 1951 alum Pete Reynolds. Pete Reynolds has been a great friend and supporter of the college over the years, and his family was a part of that. Caroline was no exception. She was a talented artist and was a member of our Public Art Advisory Council. She worked with Sue Long, and a couple of the projects that you all probably recognize on campus that she had a hand in are the two Rita Blitz sculptures outside of the Performing Arts area, as well as phase one of the Carl Benjamin mosaic. Caroline was a part of the Mount SAC family, and we are saddened by her passing. Moving on to the campaign for Heritage Hall, it's continuing to build momentum and occupying a pretty healthy chunk of foundation time and energy. Mark Rue and I continue to work together and have quality visits with both folks within the campus community, but then also alumni, friends, and supporters outside of Mount SAC. There's a lot of momentum building. It's an interesting project because a lot of folks are wanting to get involved, but it's not an easy thing exactly because it's a very specific type of project, and it doesn't necessarily maybe not a general population that is interested in supporting it. So we've got a very select prospect pool that we're dealing with. And the reason I'm going into detail on this is it's an example of the work that the foundation does. And there's a industry jargon that we use, but peer review is an important part of this process. When we go to visit people to talk to them about making a financial investment in Heritage Hall, one of the key questions that we're asking everybody is, who are the other people that you know or connected to in your world that might have an interest in participating? Because we'd like to talk with them. It's an important thing, and it asks people to think a little bit differently about what their involvement is. It actually strengthens the involvement because it isn't just about people giving money. It's also about people making connections for us that will lead to additional support. So it's a really crucial thing, especially on a project like this. So we've actually been presenting lists to people and asking them to review it, and also saying the names that you don't see on this list may be just as important as the names that you do see on the list. So it's for me, I guess it's an exciting thing for you guys, maybe not so exciting to hear about it, but it's a really important part of this process. And I'll say that about asking people to think a little differently about what they can do to help us. Trustee Bader, you're a great example, I think, what we're doing on Friday. We've got a group of your folks in your community from Foothill Philharmonic who are going to come here, and these are folks that love wonderful music, and we happen to do that here. So they're going to listen to some music, and we're going to talk to them about what's going on at Mount SAC in the hopes that they can make some connections for us. And you never know where that sort of thing is going to lead, but it's that kind of thing that has potential for us. So thank you very much in advance for helping us arrange that. We also had a recent visit from a family friend of former nursing professor Marie Smith. I've talked about Marie Smith in the past few months. We received a $100,000 gift in honor of her time at Mount SAC in the nursing program. Her caretaker, and really a family member, brought some of her personal effects to campus, and there were photos, dog tags. There was an Army helmet that she wore in Vietnam. She left Mount SAC during the Vietnam War to go help set up a hospital for civilians that were injured in the war. And looking at these pictures and seeing these these items, it was amazing to get a sense of who she was and how much her students loved her and the impact that she had. And, you know, I sort of think of baseball players that went away during World War II and sort of stopped their careers in baseball and then went and fought the war. She did the same kind of thing. She stopped her career at Mount SAC for a while, went to Vietnam, and then came back and had a pretty incredible career here. So it's important for our students and I think the community to understand the history and the real heroes that we have working here. So we're going to put these artifacts on display so that everybody can learn a little bit about some of the program's early faculty members. Upcoming activities, the Disability Athletics Fair on Saturday, April 2nd. That's going to be a lot of fun, I think. Kepler Dinner is coming up. Dr. Baca, you talk a lot about that. I don't know if you wanted to say anything else about Dr. Cassini, who's going to be here, but Dr. Spilker, about the... It's a terrific event, and I encourage everyone to attend. Our students, even though we have these wonderful speakers, I think our students steal the show every year with the research that they're doing. People are just amazed by the work that community college students are doing and the high-level work that they're doing. So very excited about that. The 29th Annual Mount SAC Foundation Golf Tournament, Pacific Palms, Friday, May 20th. If you're not golfers, some of you do golf in the tournament, but if you're not golfers, you can still participate. We have a great dinner after the tournament, and I would extend the invitation to everybody to come and join us for that. It's a great event. And then the scholarship ceremony at Bridges Auditorium at Pomona College on Saturday, June 4th. Happy to take any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other group? Okay. Now we move into board communication. At this time, the Board of Trustees will report on matters related to attendance at conferences, professional affiliations, and community involvement directly related to the function as a board members. Dr. Baca, please.
First of all, congratulations to the new and promoted employees as well as the tenured faculty. It's always a joy every year to have faculty, those that are hired newly, and then talk about their past, the kind of experiences they bring to Mount SAC. But it's equally and even, maybe even more so, really great to hear the tenured faculty once they've earned that, because the process is rigorous. And what it signifies is that these folks have chosen the right profession for themselves. It's good to hear that they have been supported in that pursuit. I wasn't putting on the hits, but only for one night. I had just a conversion of different kind of things happening. We did have the Vet Summit here last Thursday and Friday at the Pacific Palms. This is all the vet service providers from throughout the state. I think it was 375 or so that attended that. So we had a couple of really good days of honing in on some of the stuff that has been happening, the best practices, communicating that, as well as talking about the things that remain to be done for veterans. And we are working ongoing on a broader basis to try to get increased support for our veterans. I also was the judge for the final round of the Inland Spelling Bee. And so, Betty was there and supporting the kids. They're third grade through eighth grade. They can't have seen their 14th birthday yet in order to compete in that. And this is the second year I do it. Turned into a fairly long day. I think we got done 6:30 in the evening there on Saturday. It was here in the technology auditorium. Did attend with Trustee Bader and Mike the Pomona Valley Pomona Valley Hospital Foundation annual dinner. And that was a great turnout. They had a group there that was from Hawaii. I guess they were from Hawaii. They've been playing together for a lot of years, and they were just really very entertaining. It was a great event for Pomona Valley there. And, as Bill Eimer was mentioning, next month, April 9th, is the Kepler Dinner. And we do have a speaker that was the lead scientist for the Cassini mission. She's wrapping it up. She's taken over from other. The Cassini mission has been going on for quite a number of years. But she's going to have some really interesting things to say about not only what has been done with the program, but the next phase of study of Saturn. And Saturn has one and maybe two moons where the possibility of life could very well exist. And we need to get over there. We need to find those things out because, you know, those things begin to tell us about the nature of our existence. You know, how is it that we came to be? But thus far, the only...
Are they going to put a water bottle station there?
Water bottle there. We got to make sure that it doesn't... You know, as long as it doesn't have any contaminants. We want it pure. Otherwise, you know, we'll not know if there was life carried over there or if their life originated there. So, you know, rather complicated kind of thing. And let's see. Looking forward to this weekend's retreat Saturday. So, there it is.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Baca.
Study session.
Oh, that's right. Study session. It's a work session. I thought we were going to go have fun. Okay.
Trustee Bader.
Yes, thank you. It is exciting to see the newly tenured professors and their discussions about what their academic background is, and without exception, they talk about the rigorous process for gaining tenure. And it means a lot to them, and it means a lot to all of them to be here at Mount SAC. So many of them started out here. And it's very exciting to see this. I love to hear them talk. So congratulations to all of them. I attended CASH for College, which is always a very big event here on campus. The auditorium gets filled up, and I think that there's an overflow that goes a second time as well. But it's an event where a lot of the locally elected officials come. And I'd just like to say congratulations to Audrey and everyone in your department, because it's a very professional and so important for the students to find out that, yes, they can do it. They can make it. They can get to college. Putting on the hits was lots of fun. I did some background this time, and I did a little keyboard work and did a little guitar playing, and it's always fun, but it's also wonderful to meet in kind of a different setting with professors, with the assistants and secretaries and all kinds of people on campus that you don't always have a chance to interact with in a very casual and very different way. And it was interesting to see you, Eric, in your get up. Yeah, it was very different. Oh, my goodness. So putting on the hits was great, and congratulations to the Faculty Association. I have a tie-dyed T-shirt from my hippie stint here for you to take when you leave. As Manuel mentioned, we had a gala that was sponsored by Pomona Valley Hospital Medical Center. And one of the important aspects of this is that we have an intern program with Pomona Valley and for students in our nursing program, which leads to employment at Pomona Valley, an internship and a learning situation. So we do have some good connections with Pomona Valley. And Betty was there as well. So thank you for supporting that. The ribbon cutting was so exciting today. We can't have too many ribbon cuttings, actually. We can have more and more and more. But it was very nice to hear the students that spoke and represented each one of the different programs that are housed there in the beautiful Student Success Center. Oh, if I had an office up on that third story with that view, I never would have left. It's just beautiful there. Very nice. So congratulations to all on that new building, too. Okay, and that's the end of my report for today.
Thank you. Trustee Laura Santos?
I want to welcome the newly appointed employees, congratulate those that were promoted and the newly tenured. I did not attend Cash for College, but I know it's a lot of work, and I want to thank everybody for it because I got rave reviews. The people that did attend, oh, they were just, you know, really thrilled, and they talked about all the passion at Mount SAC. So it's a great event. Like I said, it's a lot of work. So thank you very much, Audrey and Dr. Scroggins and everybody that was involved with that. I attended, I've been attending some, invited to and attend some events at one of the Bassett Middle Schools at Torch. I went to coffee with the principal and a movie night, which is kind of fun. And grand openings, ribbon cuttings with the Baldwin Park Business Association. I went to a Taekwondo grand opening and the Gold Line grand opening in Irwindale. And then today's student success ribbon cutting. What a fabulous building. It's beautiful. Putting on the hits was also fabulous. I liked all the drag. And
it was definitely a gender identity
check. And I went to, I saw several really great Mount SAC women basketball games. Irvine was tough, but we did it, and I won't be at Livermore in person, but I'll be there in spirit, and I'm looking forward to watching the live transmission. So, yeah, so, you know, I'm really excited about our women's basketball team. Okay, and then I went to a training for Los Angeles County School Trustees Association. It was a really excellent panel. They talked about California Voting Rights Act, redistricting. They had somebody from LA County, the Committee on School District Organization. They had an attorney, demographer, somebody from the County Register Recorder's Office. Most of it was about redistricting, which was very interesting. They were talking about how many jurisdictions are struggling, resisting and getting multi-million dollar judgments against them, and there's no defense to California voting. But we have all that behind us, so, you know, it was just interesting. But one thing at the end left me with some questions, and I'm not sharing the handouts because most of it was, like I said, about redistricting, which we already did. What they talked about, and it left me with a question. I bet you Dr. Scroggins knows the answer. They talked about Senate Bill 415, which was recently passed. And if I understand right, they said that every jurisdiction is required to compare their voter turnout in odd years and in even years. And if there's 25% or more difference, then we're required to move our elections to even years, and we have to have a plan by 2018. And then the county office said, you know, they'll help us do the comparison, and so are we working on that?
What the county will do is they will give us the specific instructions and the data and the timeline. So we're waiting for the county to do
so, that. So they're doing our analysis and then we'll find...
No, they're not doing the analysis. They're giving us the plan, the timeline, and the data, and we do the
Then we'll analysis. Look, we'll see if there's a 25% difference in whether we have to change our elections.
Yes, the bill isn't completely... the definitions need to be interpreted because they don't match some of the categories. So there's a little bit of work to do, but yes.
Okay. And then, like I said, the bottom line is if if we're required to change to even year elections by 2018, we have to have a plan.
We have to have a plan. And the parameters will be given to us by the county because the county controls our election process.
Okay, so that was very interesting. And yeah, they have good trainings usually every year. Okay, so that's my report.
All right. Trustee Jay Chen, can we turn off some microphone?
So we could push your election forward.
So I'd like to thank the, I want to congratulate the appointed and newly tenured faculty and employees. Having spoken with many of the leaders in the faculty and just in the administration as a whole, I know how much care is put into this process. And I've heard that our actual tenure rate is a little bit lower than other schools, which, while it can be heartbreaking for people who are here and don't get it, I'm heartened to know that we're actually putting people through the paces and making sure that we are getting the very best professors to teach our students. So I want to thank the leadership that is making sure that that's taking place. I had a chance to go do the Cash for College event, and that was fantastic. The room was packed, and it was great to know that this is actually one of the biggest Cash for College events in the entire state. It's huge. And yeah, it's just something that we as a college should be very, very proud of, and we can continue to push it out there and get even more people to participate. I know that Trustee Chen Haggerty has done Cash for College events in her own district as well. So that's great. That's something that I think we can all consider doing as well to get more of that message out to our outlying communities. Putting on the hits, that was a lot of fun. And I can't think of a better way to get a huge cross-section of Mount SAC together for a common purpose. You know, we were all together in the changing rooms, changing, putting on wigs, putting on makeup, you know, classified professors, trustees, all the way. Everyone was participating. Very vulnerable moments, you know, but we were all there together. And then when we were on stage, of course, you know, it's always nerve-wracking, but I think all of us really put it out there, and it was great to do that for the students, and I'm really looking forward to doing that again. I think it's a great tradition that we have here at Mount SAC. I had a chance to go to the California Community Foundation's Unsung Heroes Dinner. So that's a very large foundation. They give a lot of grants throughout California, and made some great connections there. I met the president, the newly installed president of Master Chorale, and had a chance to talk up our fantastic choir program at Mount SAC, and they're going to be having a some kind of event later in this year. And I told her that hopefully our Mount SAC students can participate and wow everyone as well. The Student Success Center, that was a really great opening. I actually was here, some of the board members remember, for the groundbreaking. I think it was last summer. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool. And thank you for inviting me at the time. I didn't just show up uninvited. I did get an invitation. But it was great. It's great to come full circle and see something that I had witnessed a groundbreaking for be completely finished. And the speed with which it was completed is just astounding because I don't even remember construction happening there. I mean, there's a lot of construction happening on our campus, but just to show up and say, oh, wow, there's a brand new building there. And I think we have several more of those coming up, these ribbon cuttings. So it's really great to see that kind of development. And the student speakers were fantastic. Dr. Hall pointed out that they were all women, and so that's great. Happy belated International Women's Day. I think that was on Tuesday. So very, very appropriate. And hopefully our male students will be able to, male employees will catch up down the line. And yeah, I look forward to the study session, attending Kepler, and also I'll be going to D.C. next week to attend a White House briefing on community colleges. So looking forward to representing Mount SAC there. That's all.
Thank you. Student Trustee Betty.
So I want to congratulate the newly hired and newly tenured. I want to start off with the Cash for College. I really want to thank Audrey, her student ambassadors, and her team. I had a lot of students, former continuation high school students, come up to me and say, I can go to school now because I know the steps to take. And something that is, you know, really pleasing to hear is that students going after the higher education that we all really want to achieve. So I want to say thank you. I attended the Pomona's Heartbeat Gala with Dr. Vaca, Dr. Bader, and Mike Gregoric. It was really, I've never been to a gala, so it's really interesting. I kind of didn't get the attire at first, but then to me it clicked that it's like prom. So I missed out on the opportunity to use my prom dress. I got to go to putting on the hits, and I really regret to say that I didn't participate in it, because after seeing the show, I was so disappointed. I was like, I really want to be in it next year. Like, I have to go. Like, it was such an amazing show for a great cause. The spelling bee was terrific. I got there at, I think, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I stayed there till about 5 to go to putting on the hits after. And the spelling bee is just seeing these kids, I mean, and I think the lowest grade there was second grade. From second grade to eighth grade, you see these kids really trying to go out there. I mean, the winner is getting the chance to go to D.C. and compete in a national spelling bee. I mean, at that age, I didn't even know there was spelling bees. I thought that was just on TV. I attended the Veterans Breakfast in Diamond Bar along with Dr. Hall. It was really great just to see EMTs and firefighters honored for their service. Every day hearing the stories, how they wake up every morning, they go and save a life. Like, that's truly inspiring. Sorry, I'm sick, guys. I attended the women's basketball game along with Dr. Hall and Trustee Santos. And something I mentioned was, I've never seen a women's basketball game be that harsh. I mean, I was sitting there in the audience, and I was like, this is so nerve-wracking, because they were really catching up to us. And I was like, they can't beat us. Like, we have to go to state. And I think we, after this weekend, we'll be able to tell whether we're going to go or not. We're going? So exciting. Let me see. Something that Renee kind of, like, skipped over a bit, but I'm going to kind of jump back, is Sodexo is now offering discounts to students every Monday if they wear their Mountie gear. And I really want to congratulate Renee on that, because he is now chairing a food quality assurance committee. And it's a step in the right direction, because as a student government, we do hear, you know, the food prices, you know, the food quality. And I think now we're starting to progress. And that committee and the discount is a step in the right direction. And we look forward to working with Sodexo on future matters. Alex isn't here anymore, but Ethnic Studies. Ethnic Studies has been playing a really loud voice here on campus. Just having a big, diverse campus, I think it's important that people know that we do have an Ethnic Studies program. It might not be all in the same category, but we do offer classes as of right now. They're just not put together in a department. And I think that taking that step will not only increase our enrollment, but create a more, kind of a more, I don't know how to say it, more like culturally aware campus. And I want to thank Carol and the president's office, as always, because they've helped me with my Region 8 Student Trustee Retreat. It's going to be held at Mount SAC. So pulling all the student trustees together to really find out what's going on in our districts and to help each other out. If they've done an event or if they've done, if they're dealing with issues, how can we help each other out if I've solved it and you haven't? Let me see. And the board study session, I'm really excited for that. I want to learn about everything on this campus, why I try to. And right after that, I leave to Indianapolis. We're going to a conference called NASPA, which our lovely vice president will be presenting at, Dr. Yamagata Noji. And, oh yeah, this, sorry. And so earlier this week, I heard concerns on a student center. After talking with Dr. Scroggins to get clarification, I really want to express the gratitude, because I know that we want the same thing. We want a student center to happen, and I know working with the district, Gary Nelson, we're probably going to beg you like a lot, and associated students working together, we can really accomplish this, and it's something that we need greatly. And that ends my report.
Thank you. Trustee Hidalgo?
I think everyone already took all the comments, so I'll keep mine brief. I also want to congratulate our newly appointed and our newly appointed classified employees and our tenured faculty. They definitely looked like they had a sigh of relief after going through the process. So again, like to hear what echo what Mr. Chen said. You know, it's great to see that we have some really high accountability measures in place, and that we value, you know, our students getting a quality education. So I think that's a great process. I also participated in putting on the hits on both nights, Friday and Saturday. It was a great event. I haven't quite elevated myself yet to Eric's level with the 4-inch heels, but maybe.
Did your son get to see your performance?
Yeah, he did. My son came on Saturday, so he got a kick out of that. So I think I did 4 or 5 numbers that I was in. So always a good event, and my son gets a kick out of seeing me dressed up. So I also went to the IMC luncheon. I believe it was last week. Sheriff Jim McDonald was the speaker, and he spoke about some of the things that the Sheriff's Department is doing. And one of their big items that they're really taking on is human trafficking and building, you know, awareness about that topic, and you know, eliminating some of the terms that are out there, like you know, child prostitute. There's no such thing as a child prostitute, and that term is still out there. So I mean, if they're children, they're victims of some of the trafficking. So interesting to hear him speak about that, and also some of the things they're doing with mental illness and the training that they're giving to their officers when they're confronting someone with a mental illness. The numbers are actually pretty high, you know, when there's a confrontation or a call that they go on. I forget what the percentage was, but it was up there. I was surprised to hear it was that high. So good to see that they're doing some good things there, and they're working with and are starting to train agencies, local agencies and police departments. I didn't get to go to the student success ribbon cutting, but I was there for I do remember being there with, and Jay was there too, for the groundbreaking, and that seemed like it was just a few months ago, but so they worked really fast. So good to see that that's up and running. We also, during rehearsal, Jay and I went over to the food services and kind of checked out what you know, what's happening there. So it looked like there's some pretty good food choices and some, you know, different types of food available to students. So good to see that too there. And I'm looking forward to our student, our study session, excuse me, on Saturday. And I do plan to go to Kepler. I don't think I RSVP'd though. So if, Carol, if you can do that, I appreciate that. I'll forget. So that concludes my report.
All right, Dr. Hall.
I won't even say, I'll try to keep it brief. Okay. So anyway, beginning from the top, congratulations to the newly tenured, appointed, and promoted employees. I happen to have gone through the tenure process twice in my life, so I know something about it, but I don't really remember all the anxiety. It's so long ago. But anyway, I know what that experience is like. Regarding hits, I'll just mention some names for some of the key people, because I don't think the names have been mentioned yet tonight. Joan Scholers, John Cordova, Scott Hillman, Jay Truman. If you're part of the program behind the scenes, you know what I'm talking about. You know how crucial that those people were to the creation of this and pulling it off. You know, at the beginning of the week, you're convinced it's going to be a disaster, just an unmitigated disaster. But somehow by Friday night and Saturday night, it all more or less comes together. So it's a miracle every time that it happens, actually. And someday I will relinquish my role as a lead to some more capable people, but Joan keeps throwing me into this. And Cash for College, yes, I went to that. It's always great to see Senator Ed Hernandez showing up and talking about the fact that he began his career at Mount SAC. So thank you, Ed, for always coming over to plug this event. I'd almost forgotten, Betty, about the San Gabriel Valley Regional Chamber of Commerce breakfast. We go to so many things, it's just like, you forget what you've done until you start hearing other people start talking about, oh yeah, I was there. In that case, on that one, the San Gabriel Valley Regional Chamber kind of heroes breakfast, I have Mike to blame for all of this, and he knows this. He dragged me more or less into this organization 2 years ago, and I can't remember now how much I've spent, but that's all right. It's for a great cause, and so we're all talking about, you know, all the things we're doing. Attended one of the basketball games. Couldn't attend the last one because it overlapped with our HITS performance, but we're going to have streaming presentations of the games for those who want to watch. And I think our game, I don't know if it's an afternoon or evening, it's probably an afternoon up in Livermore on Friday, I believe. 7 o'clock? Okay. So that's our first game against Fresno City College, which is 29-3. So we've lost one game, they've lost three games. But Joe has set us up so we can watch this, and then hopefully we can watch the championship game too.
It'll be against City College of San Francisco.
Yeah, that's the talk.
Beat in football.
Well, I know that they're our nemesis. I know. Let's hope somebody else like the number two down here knocks them off. You know, so it becomes a Southern versus Southern thing.
They're playing another. It's North against North up there.
Is it North against North up there? Okay, I don't know. I mean, I'll look this
South
up.
South champ plays the South champ.
East Los Angeles. Da 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 da. You know, I'll just say advance as the number two seed and will play top seeded San Francisco City College in the other state semifinal. So San Francisco is going to have to beat East Los Angeles College to get to us. Okay.
That'll be tough.
Okay. So anyway. A friend of mine pointed out to me, it hadn't been mentioned, that we had something on ABC7 talking about the driverless shuttle giving students rides around Mount San Antonio College. Okay, so my friends who are into technology pointed this out to me, and we got some nice PR on television, I guess, for that. So whoever arranged for that, congratulations. And I'm sure I could go on, but I won't. Student Success Center. The only point I'll make is Jay and I were standing out on the third floor overlooking, empty ground and their old row houses and dreaming about, what we're going to put in there. Student Center, library, et cetera, et cetera. So as much as we've accomplished, there's more to be done. And hopefully we're all around to see those ribbon cuttings when they happen. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Hall. I want to join my colleagues. Congratulations to those newly appointed, promoted, and tenured professors. Ribbon cutting is a great event. We all enjoyed it. On
February 29th, I coordinated a Cash for College at Pathfinder Community Center in Roland Heights. Supervisor Canave's office was very supportive, gave us the space free of charge, a beautiful room with all the setup.
Brand new.
Roland Unified School District, PTA, was very helpful, helped promoted the event. Several of them spending time with Audrey's financial aid team for training for interpreters, workshop. Many of them were on site to help that evening. The presentation was led by Chow Dao and her team. About 60 families attended that evening. It was a great turnout. Got a great positive feedback and expressed their interest to attend future MONCSAC workshops. So I think it's a great way to get students from our feeder school connected with us at earlier stage. So that was very, thank you, Audrey, for sending your team, not only here, but reach out to. If any of you want to do this a similar thing, and I know Trustee Jay Chen is very interested, and I, one of the Roland School District, the student helped design the multi-language flyers free of charge. So I can send that electronic copy to any of you if you want. So that's my report. Let's move on to President's report.
Well, I want on to all the new employees. Those college degrees. Did you listen to UC Irvine, UCLA? I mean, it, and
USC. We're.
And did you notice a couple of the people had done the job we hired them for at other places like Cal State, and they're coming here. It's just the quality of people we're attracting is amazing. And you know, this is a market in which there's a lot of jobs out there because the state has put a lot of money into the categories we're hiring. So to get the quality of people we're getting, classified faculty, management, really outstanding. We've got a grow your own thing going here too. So the quality of the instruction we're doing and the quality of the character building we're doing is bringing these rock stars back to us as employees. And the faculty, they're so young. They're so young. The fellow that taught at Harvey Mudd College. I started teaching at Harvey Mudd College 42 years ago. I ended up now. So he and I were talking about people I taught there with are like, I don't need to. Okay.
No wonder he said 40, 50 years. I know.
That's right. So this is a busy time. There's a lot going on. Legislature's in session again. I'm on the League's Legislative Advisory Committee, so we're doing a lot to kind of control their ideas about what they want to do to community colleges. So that's really big. And then, of course, I mentioned to you individually that Dr. Bach and I are going back to Washington, D.C. on the 24th. We've been invited to meet with the Interim Secretary of Education and the Undersecretary of Education for Higher Education, Tom Mitchell, to talk about Pell Grants. And we were selected, along with 24 other colleges, to give them how we do it. How do we make it work? Because the president has proposed some specific improvements in Pell, and they're targeted improvements in Pell Grant process that will be very effective to particularly community college students. And so the ability to do that, and it's not just universities that are going back. The president of UC Irvine will be back there in D.C. as well. So this will be a great opportunity to learn from others about what they're doing with Pell Grants as well, because that's very much in need in our area. The workforce task force and the $200 million that the governor has proposed, it really is coming before we know what to do with it. So we're really scrambling to do a good job with that money. There's a trailer bill out there. The same is true in adult education. There's a trailer bill with both of those have some things in it that are problematic. So I'm up in Sacramento. I've got working with our lobbyists up there. We're going to talk to the Department of Finance. And that's where things are happening, really. These trailer bills are written by the Department of Finance. They don't go through the legislative committee process. So that's what we need to do. The regional work on workforce, Irene and I, sit on the regional consortia. Of course, she's in consultation council, and a lot of this work is trying to figure out what we're going to do with this. And L.A. Orange County, the consortium that we sit on, is going to get $65 million. Probably Mount SAC is going to get $4 million to expand. So in addition to all this state policy stuff we're doing, we're coming back home and going, okay, what are we going to spend $4 million on that serves students and expands CTE? So it's a busy time, but it's good stuff. It's the things that the other thing, and you'll hear in more detail from Mike on Saturday, is this money is coming around the edges of what we do. It's good stuff, you know, but it doesn't give us money in the center to operate the college and fairly pay our employees. So, I mean, it's one of the messages we're trying to say is you've got to change your worldview here. The state has evolved since the recession, and you're using the recession priorities to shape the budgets. This is not what we need. So, Bill, you know, too, because you're up there talking to the same people. We're coordinating our messages and trying to get this to happen. So this is a busy time, but it's good stuff. One of the projects that I mentioned to you before is the AAC Pathways project. Carol's got a handout that I want to share with you. You remember that this is funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which doesn't mean it's a bad thing just because it's funded by Bill Gates. He's got more money than God, so we're glad to take his money and use it in constructive ways. But again, there were 30 colleges chosen in a competitive process nationally, and we're one of the 30 colleges chosen to do this transformational project. And again, it's a lot of work. What this is what's called a case statement. It's sort of the initial statement about what the project is. We're going to have, over a period of a couple of years, our team is going to these national meetings and sharing information, developing this project. So this gives you sort of the fundamentals of this. The principle is that community colleges, through open access and the need to be all things to all people, has developed kind of a cafeteria plan or too many choices for students rather than being directive. And we make attempts at that, and some of the things that we do, you know about in our student services and our instructional programs. But we haven't transformed this to scale. You heard all of one of the things about the Bridge program. Well, we will maybe have 400 students in that program this summer. Okay, but our intake of new students is 2,500, 3,000. So how do we get programs like that to scale? And the success of those programs are they combine the instruction and support services, and they're targeted at the needs of the groups of students. And it's not the only onboarding experience we give to students. We've got 6 different onboarding depending on their needs. But how do we get that to scale? Part of it is that we're going to have to change not our curriculum, not all the things that we've learned about onboarding students, but we're going to have to change the structure and scheduling, timing, and staffing of what we do to get to scale. And a lot of that's what this is about. Part of what we're going to do in this process is get students on a path to choose a program of study earlier in their career at Mount SAC.
You heard these the successful students who talked to you. You noticed that they moved into a program of study quickly, graduating typically in 3 years. Our average graduation time is 6 years. So we need to get students onboarded into contextualized basic skills courses that already start to have them think about, well, maybe something in the health professions, or maybe something in the helping professions, and focus intentionally on getting students towards making a decision. And this has to be, again, a combination of support services and instruction integrated together. The philosophy is sort of stated at the bottom here, in that the pivot we're making is not to expect students to be ready for college. You hear that a lot. Oh, students aren't college ready. We want to stop that worldview. We want to stop that rhetoric and say, what we want to do is make college ready for the students. When they come to us, it's not that we're going to run them through a car wash and put a little wax on them and they're going to be a new model. That's not how it works. We've got to be ready for them. We've got to meet students where they are and get them across the finish line. So that's a little bit of the philosophy and tenor and the direction we're taking with this. Look for a lot of work on this on the next couple of years. So I wanted you to have a feel for this, because you'll see changes happening on campus as we move forward. It's coming at a good time. The state is giving us direction, and we have plans in student success, student equity. We've got a Title V HSI grant. We've got a Title V Anapezi grant. We've got money. We've learned a lot. And to be able to have the strategy that goes with this national effort will help us get us where we need to be. And faculty are excited about this, too, particularly Jeff Archibald. Man, is he. He's a dynamo. You've got a great lieutenant there, and I know the Senate has been working on this as well. So the second part tonight is we've got some change orders on the agenda tonight, and as soon as I saw those percentages in the change and knowing the reasons behind it, I thought, well, let's give you the overall picture of what's happening with some of our projects. And I asked Gary to sort of give you the big picture about what happens in certain projects where we start out the project and we don't know quite where it's going to go. And as we get into the project, things happen. And I don't want you to think it happens haphazardly, because it is an orderly process, but when it gets to the agenda, it doesn't always tell the full story. So, Gary, here's the full story.
Sure. Happy to speak on this topic. It's an important part of what we do, and it's wise to periodically take a step back and look at the big picture, and that's what we want to do. What do we use change orders for, and what drives them, what causes them? So there's a few types. There's four types that we track of different change orders, and I just want to say a little bit about each one of those. Most of the change orders that you see here are additional scope of work. That's work that was not in the original contract, but for some reason it makes sense to add it to the contract. So that might be where when we design a building, we have a room that's designed as a lecture room, and during the course of design or construction, whoever's going to use that room needs that room to be a lab room. And so we make a change during construction to the use of the room. And we have to pay for that, because a lab room would typically be more expensive than a lecture room. And that's a very general example. There's a lot of those types of needs that change, because it takes us so long to design and construct our facilities. Usually from planning to opening, it's 5 to 7 years. So things like changing building systems to use the latest technology that's available so that we're the most efficient and the most functional that we can be. We may have purchased technology that was state-of-the-art in 2010, and when we're building in 2016, we have the opportunity to do some upgrades, and so we present those as optional changes. revisions to the limits of the construction site. That's one that happens a lot here because we have brand new next to very old. And so when you draw that line and you have a brand new, perfectly level piece of concrete and it's next to a piece of asphalt that's bumpy and rough and old, it's difficult to transition those so that it makes sense. It doesn't create problems for students transitioning from the new to the old. So at times we have to extend that scope of work. And you'll see that in the food services example tonight. We're doing that for a different reason. And then sometimes it makes sense for us to pay a little bit more to get a piece of equipment or an element of the project earlier. And sometimes, you know, time is money. We spend a little bit of money, we get something earlier, we get to occupy the building at the beginning of the semester rather than mid-semester, we get to use that building for the entire semester. So sometimes it does make sense financially to do things like that. And then we would only recommend a change order for those types of things if it would be financially beneficial to us to do so. If it would make sense for us to take that extra work and separate it as a different project and put it out to bid separately, then that's what we would do, and you would see it that way. But if we can save money either in the design cost or in the construction cost by adding it to an existing project, we already have contractors in the field, they're already working, we don't have to pay them to move their equipment on, it's already there, then we would propose that as a change order because it would be more cost effective to do so. And there's, we do a lot of work to analyze those kinds of things.
There's also the issue that we need to close out the first project before we can start the next project. If we divide something into two projects, then there's a time delay, which means cost escalation and not occupying the building the way we want to.
Exactly. If we can do something now while we have contractors in place, rather than take a couple of months to do design documents, pay for that, and then go through the bidding process, in 6 months, something that costs us $100,000 might cost us $105,000. 6 months from now. And we see that very, very real in our construction costs. You know, $100,000 is small in a program the size of ours.
But the percentages look big on the change orders.
Yes. So they look large, especially on the smallest projects, because if you have a $50,000 project and you buy one thing that costs $10,000, well, you've just done a 20% change order. On a $20 million project, a $10,000 change order, you know, is a tiny little percentage. It still may make sense to buy that $10,000 thing as part of a $50,000 project, you know, in the same way as it would be as part of a $1 million project. Other types, unforeseen conditions. This happens all the time on remodel projects, and it happens to us a lot underground. Much of Mount Sac was built in the 40s and the 50s, and they didn't write anything down when they buried stuff. So we dig and we find things underground all the time. Tanks and sewer pipes that we didn't know existed that
sometimes
were just left there.
Sometimes we find by breaking them.
Yes, and a lot of that is asbestos. So we don't assume that the worst case scenario is going to happen in a bid project, because if we do, the contractor is going to try to take advantage of that money. So we keep our scope really tight on a low bid project, and if we encounter something, then we negotiate hard for the cost of that, and we get the best value that way. If it's like with the leasebacks, we were putting in pretty good allowances to cover those types of things, and you didn't see change orders. You saw the change orders in a negative direction on leaseback. That was because we didn't have that adversarial relationship with our contractors. We had a collaborative relationship, and we knew that they weren't going to overcharge us because they wanted to be here for the next project. So in the low bid things that you're starting to see again now because we lost our leaseback, you're going to see those kinds of change orders coming up again. Underground utilities are really common, as I said, and then also, like I said, remodel projects. Building 4 was a great example. Building 26 was another great example. We found all kinds of things in the walls in those buildings that were not reflected in the construction documents that we had. And it's very expensive to open up the walls of an existing building to find out what's there. So we make assumptions, and we do our best to judge what's behind things, but in a case where we're using a building, we can't tear it apart while we're drawing the drawings because we're still using it. So we make our best estimates, and sometimes we find things that are costly to correct. On a remodel project, we would expect to see change orders in the neighborhood of 10% on a big project. A big remodel, a $5 million remodel, or a $10 million remodel, we would budget 10% for change orders on a project like that, just on the building. And that's very common throughout the public works and public school construction in California. architect and engineer errors and omissions, those are the ones we really don't like to see because that means that our plans and specs weren't perfect. But the reality is that there are no perfect plans and specs. When the government builds a submarine, even if they build the same one 20 times, they still have errors and omissions in their design, no matter how much they spend on it, because we're not mass producing. We're building a one-off building. And if we wanted perfect construction documents, it would cost so much to buy that that it would actually cost us more than having some change orders. So we accept construction documents that are 97% accurate, and we expect to pay 3% or 2% in change orders just for errors and omissions. If we wanted 99% construction documents, we pay twice as much and it would cost us more. So that's, we try to find that right balance between perfect construction documents and change orders for errors and omissions. Historically at Mount SAC, we've tracked about 2.5%, which is a little bit better than industry average. About 3.5 would be industry average. And I did a presentation on that a couple of years ago and I have those numbers. So 2.5 is a good number. It's acceptable. So, you know, those kinds of things, we can reduce those by doing constructability reviews, by having contractors, construction managers on the team early to look at the documents. We can identify the big items that are imperfect in those documents. We can get rid of the big, nasty errors and omissions in most cases. Once in a while, we find one.
You can catch them early by having our own employees on site watching for that. If you don't catch them early, the cost is higher.
Exactly. Yeah, when you can catch a problem, either a site problem or a building design problem early, we don't have to redesign. It doesn't slow the design process down much, or we don't have to issue a change to the project during bidding time, which is expensive and time-consuming. Having project managers that we keep on campus over time is one of the ways that we can reduce those kinds of changes because they learn what's underground. They learn, you know, what we've learned the hard way on earlier projects. We can, you know, we don't have to learn the same lessons over and over again. So that's something, by bringing our project management in-house, we're able to reduce those kinds of changes. And then, you know, just having good business relationships with our trades. A good contractor will tell us if there's a problem with the documents during bidding. They'll write it up and they'll send it to us. Some contractors won't. They'll note it and they won't price that work. And the day they get their contract, they'll ask for money for that thing that they found wrong. So by having good business relationships, by paying quickly, paying on time, paying when we owe contractors, when there is a legitimate change, being fair with them, we develop those business relationships that reduce that adversarial kind of situation that you see so much in public works
and
construction.
That also is true by using more local contractors or at least regional contractors, yes, for the work.
We don't have a lot of contractors in Walnut, and surprisingly, not very many in industry either. But there's a lot of contractors in the greater San Gabriel Valley, and probably 75% of the contractors we use are from this region. Some from LA, some from Orange County, a lot from Riverside. There's a lot of contractors out that way. But just like within our district, probably 50%, 45% of our contractors are within the boundaries of Mount SAC District. Anyway, contractors that know us, know when we pay, know that we do pay, know that we don't fight and go to court on issues unless we are really right, they work with us and they give us fair prices. And we can at least reduce the cost and the frequency of these kinds of change orders and not get stuck for the little nitpicky ones. You know, those are the ones that really are costly. They add up. And I could give you lots of examples. But And then code compliance. Rarely we see a code that has changed between the time we design and when we build. And when this happens, we want to, in some cases, maybe we don't have to, but we should, like accessibility codes or elevator codes, safety codes. We want to use, you know, the new technology that's coming out in the building systems if we should, if it makes sense to. And so if the building was designed under the 2010 code and the current code, 2012 code, has a new system in it, new signage, new elevator requirements, we want to go with the newer requirements, and we have to pay for that. That's usually a cost upgrade. So that happens probably 0.5%, maybe 0.33% of all of our change orders are this type. So it's the least amount, but they do happen once in a while. We tag that. We try to tell you when that's the case. So this month, those were the four types. This month in food services, everything that you're seeing for our food services change order is added scope of work. And this is only due to the fact that we didn't build the parking structure. The parking structure had a pretty significant outside area between the structure itself and the new food services building. And that had a lot of open space and student seating. When we lost the parking structure project, we lost that scope of work as well. Now, there's nothing that says we can't go back and do some of that work on a new contract. But in this case, we priced it both ways. And because we'd be able to save so much money on the design working with our existing contractors by just giving them field directives, not formal biddable set of plans, a big thick roll of plans, we were able to do this work for about 20% less by going change order. And we're pretty confident in those numbers. And so that's why we would recommend a change order of that magnitude to you, is because it's going to save money in the long run. We can't leave the empty hole where the old building was. We have to do something there. And so that's what we're doing. We're addressing scope of work that was in the parking structure project, not the structure itself, but the adjacent space in this project. And this is that example where we're extending the limits of construction. We're moving that line into where the parking structure project would have been. And so it's work we needed to do. We were going to do it as part of another project. We're just doing it as part of this project, and the money kind of goes with it. So hopefully that makes sense.
And it supports food services because it extends the seating immediately adjacent to food services. And we made a couple of adjustments in the exterior of the food services to account for the fact that we're having this additional seating.
And so it includes the surface, the concrete, the landscaping, grading, packing, filling up the hole, and then the steel shade canopy and trellis structure is a portion of that. That's something that was an element of the other project, and we're moving it into this project. It's actually in a different location, but we're still doing it in a place that makes more sense now that we're not doing so much work on the parking structure.
That's one on the west side, right?
Yes. And that's going to be a neat space over there. We've got the art. I think we mentioned that the sculptures and the mosaic that's in that area. So that's a nice space for it. It was going to go further uphill, closer to the parking structure. But since we're not building it there, we're not taking the hill down. We kind of moved that same assembly and put it over in a space where we can also use it.
And it'll work in the plans that will eventually implement the parking structure.
Yes. Yes, so it doesn't mean we don't have to tear it down later. Whatever we do up there, if we build up the same parking structure or a smaller parking structure, we do nothing up there, it'll still work. And so the big savings here is in the design cost. We're able to do this on field directives, 8.5 by 11, not a big roll of plans and a formal bidding process. So we are saving good money. And we've got contractors already in the field, so there's some savings there too.
So which number is that on the agenda?
Let me check. Is it 10 or 11?
I think maybe.
Yes, on page 40, consent 15. And that's a pretty significant change order. And when we add it to the other one, which was kind of the same thing, 12% is a lot. We would normally be getting money back on this project, but because of that change in the parking structure, all of that additional money, which is going to be somewhere over $1.5 million, is coming from that parking structure budget, and we would have spent it as part of that project as well. So it kind of makes sense, I think. And that's why I would recommend it. Otherwise, I wouldn't suggest it. Building 40, if you don't know Building 40, that's one of the modular buildings that was installed pre-Measure R on the very east side of campus near the farm, and it's been used for all kinds of different things, for continuing education, for math classrooms when we were building a new math building, for fiscal services when we were remodeling building 4 administration, and now we're converting it back into classroom space. And we've talked about this here a couple of times, but I think we'll see that we'll get at least 10, if not 15, or maybe even more good years out of these classroom spaces the way we've built them now. We did this as a very fast project. So we didn't spend a lot of time in design. We ran this project in about 50 days of construction, which is we accelerated it in every way we could so that we could occupy that for the spring semester. It's about 10,000 square foot remodel. Cost per square foot, if you see the total cost of the project, I think this one is, maybe I should have done these in order. This is consent 13 on page 36. If you look at, all you're seeing is one of those contracts, but if you look at the whole project, it was about $1.8 million. $180 a square foot all in for a remodel is really a good cost in this construction market. We paid about $275 or a little bit more for administration. So we're getting a really good value doing this. And then these change orders, we found some space that was not gonna be well utilized, and we made some revisions to the walls so that we could create a storage room. So that was just gonna be wasted space. By making that little change, we gained some space in the project. We found some of the data wiring on the old side of the building that we're not remodeling, that was not in cable trays, it wasn't well organized, and we had to redo that cabling anyway, so we added this cable tray to that section, that was one of the items. And then we did some upgrades to our campus standards with our pull-down screens. For years, we were putting pull-down screens that were manual, and what we were finding was that when they would let them go back up, they would go up too fast and they would break the mechanism inside the screen. So, you know, they're more expensive if we put in electric screens, but what we're finding is that life cycle costs, they last much longer. And so in the long run, they're actually less costly. So we did that upgrade as a change order. We weren't sure if we're gonna have the money to do it. That campus standard was just in the process of being changed when we started this project. And so we finalized that campus standard and we implemented that on this project as a change order. And then we did some accelerated shipping for metal door frames. Metal door frames are notoriously long lead items, and we paid a little bit of extra money, got those early so we could finish on time.
This campus standard principle is one the college hasn't used before. There's been a lot of different configurations of similar spaces, and it's caused us difficulties with operation, training, replacements, end of life, and things like that. So we're really moving to a campus standard for each of the similar types of spaces. It will enable us to schedule in instruction, because the spaces will have similar multimedia equipment and so on. And so this will, in the long run, save us money with the scope of ordering this kind of stuff. We can make larger orders.
Exactly.
And in the training and operation. So it may be that the quality of the standard in equipment that we put in is a little bit higher, but we'll, in the long run, save money by doing that.
We do want to look at life cycle costs. That's even an issue in accreditation, something that I address in some of the things I work on with accreditation, that when we invest in capital improvements, we don't just look at the first cost, we look at the long-term cost, the cost over time. And Bill's right, we were only doing campus standards for HVAC controls and fire alarms just a few years ago, and now we have a couple dozen things like these screens and audiovisual systems that we're using campus standards for. And we're able to do that because we were able to bring the management of our program in-house to a large degree. The rest of the change order was some unforeseen building conditions, just some things that were up above the ceiling that were associated with the data wiring and then the drywall work. So you can see those on page 36. And then the last group of change orders I was wanting to talk about was the modernization in our IT and public safety building, building 23. That was also one of the buildings that was here pre-Measure R. It was actually constructed on the site of our science building when the library was remodeled in the 1990s. Then it was taken down and reinstalled across the street, and we moved our IT group and our public safety group in there. And when our construction managers, Bovis Lendlease, moved out and IT expanded, we needed to remodel a big section of that building. And we have the same kinds of things. Unforeseen conditions, some of the ceilings that were installed when that was built, they weren't up to the current standards, so we did some seismic upgrades. We did door hardware revisions to bring those up to current standards. We've made a standard on campus where areas have a kind of a little area where they can do food prep and keep the dishes clean. It helps us in rodent control on campus. People eat food in their desk. They don't throw the trash in their wastebasket. They have a trash garbage disposal. So we made some changes to some existing cabinets to provide that group a small hospitality suite, and then we replaced some signs to comply with code. And you can see that change order on page 36 as consent 13. And that's what I have. If there's any questions, I'll do my best to answer those.
So we appreciate your putting up with this, because you don't often see all of the stuff that's behind the change orders. And we put a few words of that, like, that it was scope change, or it was owner driven, and those sorts of things. But we wanted you to see that what that constitutes and why we're doing those things as the change orders come forward.
We will see, without the lease back, as we go forward with the business building, we will see change orders. It's just the reality of.
And I know you may have had some questions on other facilities related items on the agenda. So with Gary here, if you want to put those questions forward, 9, 10, 11, others.
So how do you ensure, without a bid process, that the change order price that's been presented to you is fair and reasonable?
Yeah, that's a great question. We put a lot of time into that. We have a pretty robust database of existing costs. There's not a lot that we do that we haven't seen somewhere before in the last 10 or 12 years. So we have a good comparative database. We also have the ability on larger change orders to go outside and use outside estimators. If we don't agree with a cost, maybe it's just a line item cost. Why are we paying $20 a square foot for concrete? We're used to seeing that at $12.50. We have the ability to ask those questions and justify that cost is real, or negotiate those costs down. And in a change order, we have the ability to do that negotiating, as opposed to a low bid. We may or may not, we get what we get. So it's based on the historical knowledge that we have of our unit costs of construction. And then also, if we need to, like I said, for larger, we go outside with an outside estimator. And we do this all the time. That's what we do.
And because it's not bid, we work with somebody who will do this on a straightforward basis with us.
Essentially open book.
Have there been instances where, after this process, you've decided to go with an outside bid?
Yes, many times we consider change orders and we say, no, we're going to go with an outside bid. In fact, there was just the most recent one. There was a change order that we considered on the exterior concrete space near the Student Success Center that you just saw this morning. And we saw the change order price and we said, I think we can probably save about 10% if we go out to bid. And it was just because the concrete people were already gone. And so,
in fact, in some of those, we're considering bringing some projects in-house, aren't we?
Correct. I've wanted to for a long time try to involve our classified staff in doing some of these kinds of projects. Dr. Scroggins has been encouraging of that, and we have the ability to do that to a certain extent.
So we have a construction team now that can do some of that work, so we don't have to go out at all. We can just do it with our own staff. And it makes Rawlings much happier to
not building full buildings, but small work and targeted work. And if we can't get a contractor that is interested in doing small work, or wants to pay off his house on one small project, then we'll do it ourselves.
The other thing we don't want to forget, and that is we have a construction management firm who looks at these orders. We have our own project managers who look at the orders, and then they finally go to Gary. and he'll put the final blessing on them. But we've gone through a lot of work to get to that point, to get them to you, so that you know that we've done a very detailed research on this, on these change orders, and you can feel comfortable when you get them. There's nothing wrong with questioning them, but you need to know that there's been a lot of set of eyes look at these change orders, especially these bigger ones.
I think, relevant to what we're talking about here, and that is our evolving relationship with Tilden Coyle, okay? Because obviously, and Mike just uses the word, as a construction management firm, I assume we're referring to Tilden Coyle when we say that?
Yeah.
But with the disappearance, apparently for a while, of leaseback, the question then becomes, what category does that throw Tilden Coyle? Are they just going to become a kind of general contractor who bids on future projects that we are interested in? How is our relationship with Tilden Coyle changed, evolved, whatever, because of the legal issues involved with leaseback, et cetera?
That's a great question, and that relationship is transitioning. We have a great working relationship with Tilden Coyle. They're a much different organization than Bovis Lendlease. They're a real contractor. They really build stuff. They're not just the paper kind of group. So we like that. With the multiple prime, we probably will pay a little bit more than with the leaseback. That's my opinion at this point, but I haven't seen enough of the multiple prime with Tilden Coyle to tell you that I believe that to be definitive. So as we go forward, we want to be careful about which projects we give them. We don't want to give them projects that they can't really add a lot of value to. We're certainly not going to give them everything we do. We've got lots of projects that we can do with our own team and with our own project management with general contractors. So it's where that multiple prime makes sense that we're working with. The larger projects, clearly we there's a lot to be gained by working with a construction manager. It's that medium-sized project in that $1 million to $5 million range that we're working on right now. In fact, we met on it this morning. We had discussion on that this morning. And maybe the best way to do those is to maybe bundle up three or four to make a $10 million package of work that makes sense for Tilden Coyle to work with us on and bid all of those projects at the same time, put one management team from Tilden Coyle on that and go forward. But it is, as a construction manager, similar but not too much alike to what we had before.
Do you foresee a time when someone else would be doing construction management other than Tilden Coyle?
I foresee us doing a new RFP when and if we do another facilities bond. And at that time, we would make a selection of the best firm.
But until that time, they would be the construction manager in each and every project?
On the large projects, meaning the business computer tech, they're already working on that. The site work for the solar plant, you are going to look at an agreement for that project tonight. Athletics complex, student campus center. I said it right this time. And then probably another package of those medium-sized projects bundled up to make maybe another $8 or $10 million of work.
And that doesn't present any legal or other risk to us, that there still are one and only construction management company?
From what council has said, we're fine doing what we're doing, and I believe we are too.
That's the item number number 9.
Is that I think is 10.
Consent calendar number 9.
Let me see.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a general discussion in our relationship with Tilden Coyle. That's all I'm interested in.
It's 9.
Consent 9 is the agreement for construction management.
Okay. And those are the projects you talk about.
This idea of bundling up a group of smaller projects, we haven't brought that to you yet. We really haven't determined what that would look like. It's something that we'll do probably in the next 6 months.
So how do we know that we're getting the best price for construction management from Tilden Coyle? Because it seems like they got in through the leaseback.
Well, the master agreement has the terms of the provision of services in it. It was part of the bidding process to determine who the general contractor would be. And so we're reasonably comfortable with the fact that this was a conforming bid and it was a low price bid.
We did an RFP for this construction management services. We did it quickly this summer during the time when we were seeing leaseback go away and the time that we bid our business building out. So we had proposals from a number of firms. Tilden Coyle agreed to hold the same sliding scale of fee with the construction management agreement that they had with the leaseback. So we were happy with that fee. We're happy with that as a construction management fee.
Yes.
Yes.
That was competitively bid.
Twice.
Okay, then it's a sliding.
Once it's leased back.
See, it's sliding, so it changes based. It gets lower as the project size gets bigger.
For example, projects under $1 million, their general conditions number is 20%. It's because that's what it costs to do a small project. So for this project, the sliding scale falls, I think, in that group under $20 million.
Tilden Coyle only does the construction management and not the construction. Is that right?
They do some construction. They have construction people. What they have that's the most valuable, in my opinion, is the superintendents, the people that are, you know, boots on the ground guys that have been building buildings for their entire life. Same place I came from in my career.
But so they manage the other
trades, the electrician, the plumber, the concrete guy. They manage those subcontractors, which would be the exact same thing as a general contractor would do. They function
and the
here.
Services are in the master agreement. The services that they provide, that's what was bid on. They're like any general contractor. The advantage is to using the same firm. We have the same team to work with all of the time.
I could ask Matt, what's the percentage of the work you guys do that's GC work and what's the percentage that's CM work?
It fluctuates, but it shifts from like 60-40 to 40-60, depending, I mean, in totality across our book of work.
So roughly half of the work they do is as a general contractor and half the work they do is as a construction manager, which was true for Bovis, but not out here on the West Coast. You know, they had to go back east to get the general contractor work. And that's really the difference.
And their markup was 7%?
7%, whether it was a small project or a large project. And that's where they got in trouble, is when we started doing small projects. When we were doing the ban, we didn't have any big projects. We gave them a dozen small projects, and their fee at 7% of, you know, a $100,000 project, they couldn't function. So the sliding scale is the way, really the way to go.
I had a few questions, Gary. On the parking lot, it talks about the California Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, and there's a $45,000, I guess, bid threshold, anything below that for projects. Does that mean that it doesn't have to go to bid? It says provision, but
right.
I don't know if that is consistent with all projects under 45,000.
That's a great question. That I call it CUPCA because I can't remember that long name. Uh-huh. But that law moves the public contract code threshold from 15,000 to 45,000 for bidding, for public bidding. Right. So technically, we could award a contract on a written quotation from one contractor for a $44,000 project.
Right.
We don't do that. We take bids for those, but we don't advertise and do all the formal bidding for a smaller project like that. We would have a contractor, we would invite three or four contractors that we know, they would submit bids, we would take the low bid for a $20,000 or $25,000 project. And we do a lot of those. You're seeing that one because when we added that extra work, it went over 45,
right, right.
And so legally we have to have your approval on the project. Yeah. So that's that CUPCA is kind of complicated. It involves even force account, how much work we can do with our own staff, like mm-hmm. we were talking before. It allows us to do more work with our own staff under that law, and it requires us to do certain things accounting-wise to keep track of our costs, how much we use our labor staff, our maintenance staff for construction, and how much we use for maintenance. Yeah. The purpose of that law is to not let a college or a school district bleed away their maintenance staff that's here and being paid for to take care of the campus to build things. Yeah. And we've been really good about that. So we're very careful about how we do that.
It just caught my eye because it was $44,747 and it's $45,000 is the threshold.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from a layman's person, it looks like they're doing that to get their foot in the door, knowing that there possibly could be additional work after. So where once it becomes a change order, I mean, yeah, you can do it through a rebid process, but it just, you know, looking at it just from my vantage point, it just kind of...
Yeah, I understand that. It's very rare that we have projects that are in that category that are over the $25,000 number. Mm-hmm. We require bid bonds at $25,000. So most of those kinds of projects that we do with three bids are between $10,000 and $25,000. Once in a while, we get one close, and this one just happened to work out that way.
So it's a provision, but there's nothing saying that it still can't come to the board, even if it's under $45,000? Would that be correct?
Yes, that's not our policy here. Our policy here is that those types of projects, because we do so many of them and we move so quickly on those, to move so quickly on those that we do just approve those.
Yeah, I'm just concerned with now a different delivery system that it might, you know what I mean, give that appearance where, you know, someone wants to get their foot in the door and then add, you know, we're adding scope or they're making recommendations for change orders and then it kind of moves everything up. So.
We're also very careful that there is no dividing a larger project into smaller pieces or phases to avoid competitive bidding. We review that carefully.
Yeah, sometimes it's maybe tempting to do that, but we do not, because that would be something that would be an audit finding, and our purchasing department, you know, watches that very closely. So we all work together. We know what's right, and we follow the law. It doesn't make sense to not follow the law.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so when I saw the 3.8%, given my very limited knowledge of, you know, construction management, I thought, oh, that sounds pretty reasonable. Sounds like a good price. But then there's also general conditions and general requirements, which adds on to it, and there's really nothing, no estimate given, no percentages given. So how do we know that we are not being overcharged on these general conditions and general requirements? And do you have an estimate for what they should be as a percentage of the overall budget?
Yes, I have that number. The total of the general conditions and general requirements added together is just over $900,000. That work is done on an open book basis, and that is a not to exceed. So we will not go over that amount no matter what, unless we add scope to the project. If we build a building out there that isn't in the plans, then that's a new deal. But for the work that's on the plans, it's capped at that.
$900,000 on the $7,362,000
dollar
project. Okay.
Yes.
That's not listed here, right?
No, it's not. And and I think in the future I would like to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a good number to put there.
That's my mistake.
And that's also in the master agreement.
Yes. Those are driven by percentages on a sliding scale as well.
Yes.
Those are capped as a percentage on a sliding scale.
And that's generally listed separately from overhead and profit. That is, in standard procedure, something separate. I'm not looking at this because 900,000 off of 7 million that's like 12%, right?
Yeah, that's quite a bit. But that's the fences and the, you know, all the stuff that in the old agreement, we would put those in the subcontractors. Mm-hmm. So here with Tilden Coil, we've brought those into the Tilden Coil agreement. And so it's really really construction costs there. That's the guy in the field making sure that they're following safety rules. That's the guy in the field making sure that the storm drain doesn't wash mud into the street, those kinds of things.
And the reason we did that is that in working with the trades, you really want that to be with the GC.
Yes.
Because you don't want a situation where one of those general conditions pieces is not done and it delays the trades, or once you start delaying trades, then it cascades. Mm-hmm. So it's very strategic to do that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, having that in the trades on a multiple prime, we found that that was creating delay claims that we didn't really need to have.
Right.
And so we learned from what we did in the past, and we brought that into the leaseback or into the CM in this group of projects, and we're really saving money on
When I came, there were 7 pages of those claims, 47 separate ones.
I have an honorary JD from working through all of those.
Yeah.
I can see how that can be a big mess again. If every trade is required to bring in their own sanitary,
A lot of duplication,
fencing, et cetera.
So we have much better control over that in this arrangement. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's all, again, it's all open book. It's all their profit is set aside, so we pay. As we see, we get copies of all the invoices. I mean, our invoices that we get are really thick, and we go through those, but every detail is there. So we see fence rental. We know if it's...
And the subcontractor invoices is part of the GC work.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. I mean, we came up with this after having, learned a few lessons. So,
thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Gary. That will maybe eliminate some of the items that we want to pull.
And that completes the president's report.
All right. So we will move on to consent calendar. And I have item number 2. Item number, let me do the correction first. There was one area, is on page 59 on the consent calendar. The new and or revised classified job classification description under examples of essential function illustrative only. There are a couple words we need to remove. It's on the bottom, the third bullet from the bottom. So remove, evaluate prerequisite overrides, that 3 words from the third bullet. So the bullet should read, provides an official evaluation of transcripts and interprets tests and assessment scores. So that's the only correction we have.
I want to comment on that. This week, we learned from discussion in constituent review that the Academic Senate has a position on this particular job. And so we're going to have some other discussions about it. But we still recommend that this goes forward because we're hiring in this area, and it's a considerable improvement over the older job description. So you'll see this one again, and when it comes back, it's because we want to have that discussion with the Academic Senate.
Okay, so that's the correction. And now we're going to pull item number 2. Anybody number 9? Dr. Hall, no more? Yes?
Go ahead and pull them even if we just run through them.
Okay, 9. And number 20, 22, 25, and 26. Any other item? Okay. So may I have a motion to move consent calendar except those items I just named?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Dr. Baca, seconded by Trustee Bader. No more discussion, I believe. Student trustee?
I concur.
All right. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Those items are on the consent calendar passes. Item number 2, may I have a motion, please?
Second.
Okay, moved by Trustee Jay Chen and seconded by Trustee Hall. Discussion.
So I understand that sometimes things come up and they don't make it in time for timely submission for a board packet. I'm looking at these contractor contracts. Most of them are happening after today's date, but then we do have one which is February 1st, Student Services International Program. And that's even before our February meeting. So I'm wondering why that one came in so late.
So in independent contractors and professional experts and in short-term employees, we hire those on an as-needed basis, and they regularly will appear with dates prior to the board meeting.
Okay.
So they don't incur an ongoing commitment by the college to the employee. That's the principle upon which that's based. We need them now. So we do it. And it's not required by law that they come to the board prior to hire.
Okay. And so I don't actually remember were we invited to the International Students Lunar New Year celebration?
Yes, it's the one that was on Saturday in the parking lot.
Oh, okay, all right.
Part of the
definitely try to go next time.
Regional chambers.
Oh, the regional chamber. Oh, yeah. The farmers market.
Farmers market.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I see. That's it.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. I'll call for questions. Student trustee.
I concur.
All right. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Item number 2 passes. Item number 9, motion, please.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Okay. Moved by Dr. Baca, seconded by Trustee Bader. Discussion.
Well, I asked that it be continued just so I would take a moment to look at
this before we passed on it, but as I look at it, I think probably most of my questions were answered here. It does relate to the West Parcel Solar Project site. We know that there is some controversy over some of these contracts with Tilden Coil that are part of ongoing litigation with the city of Walnut or the United Taxpayers Walnut. But
only the lease back conversion to GC, that would be the only thing.
Yeah, so I don't think there's anything here that I need to know further. I had pulled this just to make sure we had a general discussion of our relationship with Tilden Coil here going forward. And I think my questions regarding that have been answered already. Okay.
Okay. Student trustee?
I concur.
All right. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Number 9 passes. Item number 20. Motion, please.
I got it.
You have to move.
I'll move to approve item 20.
Okay.
Second.
All right.
He has a conflict of interest, so he's
I see.
The room,
okay. All right. Sorry. Okay. Discussion.
Yeah, I didn't pull it.
I don't know who pulled it.
Robert pulled it because he has a conflict of interest.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So he wants us to vote with his.
I got it. Okay.
In his absence. Okay.
Okay. That's good. Student trustee?
I guess before we do have that vote. Well, before we vote, I would like just one item of discussion. Obviously, the payment amounts do differ a little. They range from $7,000 down to $4,000. And I'm assuming that's just based upon some calculation of how many students are likely to be under management or that being taught. Is that right, Irene?
Based on the size of the program that we're offering.
So it's just driven by the number of students. Okay. That's all I need to know.
Okay. Thank you. So student trustee again.
I concur.
All right. Those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Item 20 passes. Item number 20.
You should direct the secretary to record the votes of those present.
You want
abstention
one to one?
For Robert.
Okay, abstention. Sure.
Got that?
Yes. May I hear aye or nay from Trustee Hall?
Aye.
Trustee
Trustee Chin Hagerty?
Aye.
Trustee Baca?
Aye.
Wilson.
Trustee Bader?
Aye.
Trustee Santos?
Aye.
Trustee Chin?
Aye.
Thank you.
And remember, we're making audio recordings so that that becomes a public record. So this is a Brown Act requirement. That's why we're doing it this way.
Okay.
And then one absent. Thank you, Robert.
Record Robert as abstaining.
Okay, pay item 22.
Move to approve.
Move to approve item, consent item 22.
Second.
Okay, moved by Dr. Hall and seconded by Trustee Bader. Discussion?
Yeah, I pulled it only because I guess I'll ask Irene this question. Obviously, we've got a grant here of total funding now, $641,870. And I'm sure we've got some management responsibilities here for, I'm just kind of curious to know where the money's going. You know, I just don't even know where this $641,000 is going, if it's all being used on our campus, if some of it's being subcontracted out to other community colleges that are doing work. I'm just kind of curious to who's it hiring? And I'm assuming it says it's going to go away on June 30th, 2016. So either a lot of people are going to lose their jobs on June 30th, 2016, or there's follow-up money somewhere.
The vast majority of this money is being subcontracted to the Statewide Academic Senate for the CID work that they're doing. So we're the grant managers. There's a monitor at the Chancellor's office, but the Chancellor's office cannot send money directly to the Academic Senate. So mm-hmm. we are the fiscal agent, if you will. Mm-hmm. So the money that's spent here supports our grants office that does a good deal of the work in making sure that all of that everything is accounted for properly. It supports our office in doing some of the event scheduling and contract monitoring, but the vast amount of the money goes to the Academic Senate. This grant will be either extended or reflown at the end. The work is anticipated to continue, but we may or may not stay as the grant manager. Okay. We'll wait and see what the RFP looks like.
So in terms of money that stays on our campus, it basically stays there with Adrian Price or within her office or whatever
Adrian
it is.
And my office has a CID director responsibility as well, but we're shouldering it ourselves because of the short time span.
Okay.
So there's no additional hiring other than short-term yeah. folks to help with the accounting work.
And how many other colleges are we shooting money out to?
All Statewide Academic Senate. The Statewide Senate is taking the lead in creating the CIDs, the curriculum yeah. identifying numbers. They gather faculty together by discipline to yeah. identify and create the CID, yeah. the templates, mm-hmm. and then they're available to the whole state. Mm-hmm. So we're facilitating the work of the Senate.
Is Dan involved in any of that? No? Are you? CID?
He's been a reviewer.
Just curious.
He's been a
primary reviewer.
He's yeah. a primary reviewer.
Yeah, okay.
But he has not been, he's not part of the organizing team. That's part of, the statewide leadership.
Okay. That's my only question.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Student trustee? All right. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Item 22 passes. Item number 25. May I have a motion, please?
Move to approve consent item 25.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Dr. Hall, seconded by Dr. Baca. I'm the one pulling it, and I there is an August board meeting date, and I request to change to August 17. I want to thank my board colleague for thoughtful consideration. That's the time that I can address some health issue, medical issue. So what do I do?
You ask for an amendment to the motion. To change the August 10th to August 17th.
I make a motion that we change the proposed date for our August board meeting to August 17, 2016.
Second.
And then you take a vote on the amendment?
Okay. Oh, I will take a vote on the amendment. Student trustee? Those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you.
To amend.
Okay, and then vote to
vote
the
to
amended
pass the
motion.
Amended motion.
Okay, may I have a motion, please, Dr. Hall?
Move to approve consent item number 25.
As amended.
Second.
All right. Student trustee?
I concur.
Okay, those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. That's why I was asking before the meeting. It's
complicated.
Yep. All right. Item number 26. Motion, please.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Trustee J. Chen and seconded by Dr. Barker. Discussion.
I just pulled this because I was wondering why, it's very obvious, but why aren't we having this at Mount SAC? We have such beautiful facilities.
This is a large event, and we do not have... a facility sufficient in size to.
How large is it going to be? I've never been to one.
Audrey, what do we commonly have at the scholarship?
Well, we had the Fairplex last time, right, Bill?
1,000 people.
Yeah, and actually, that was the question I was going to ask, but
it's
I wasn't. But why we were moving out of the Fairplex where we had it last year, right?
It's booked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's booked. We weren't able to get it. So the two in district locations, go to locations for us, Fairplex and Pacific Palms, are both booked. So
that'll do it.
Okay.
All right. Student trustee?
I concur.
All right. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Item 26 passes. So we're done with the consent calendar. Action items. Action item number one, consideration of 2016 election for the Triple City Board of Directors, page 83 and 84.
Move to approve.
Okay.
We have to nominate people.
Motion.
No, you're already nominated. You just have to vote on 8.
Judy, who moved and seconded?
Who moved?
I moved.
Okay, and
I don't think anybody seconded.
Second? Okay, second by Dr. Baca. Moved by Trustee Bader. Okay. I like to recommend we vote for Mary Figueroa. Sue Keith, Linda Wah, number 9, Louis Jeffrey, Santa Monica. These people I personally know, they are very dedicated and a lot of experience. Any other?
I have three
colleagues?
Others that I would just, I don't know them personally. Number 8, Sally W. Biggin. Number 12, Jerry Hart from Imperial Community College District. And number 13, Cy Galassa from Peralto. Primarily because they're incumbents, and it does take several years to get, well, at least a year, to get up to speed and to learn all the procedures for the CCT and Triple CT. So I would like to recommend them as well. And I think that is.
I've made it
that's seven. Yeah.
How many do we?
We can do
eight.
Up to eight.
Oh,
eight. Okay.
We don't have to do 8, but we can do up to 8.
I'd like to recommend Kenneth Brown.
Yeah, I would too.
Okay.
Okay. El Camino.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So that made it 8.
Do you know? But if anyone else has, I don't. I've just been reading the resumes, and I think he. Just looking at what people bring to the table.
Yeah, he's got a science background too, and he's an educator. I've met him before. Okay. So, yeah.
I was impressed with Carmen Avalos from Cerritos College. I think she
Mm-hmm. I had quite a strong background, but I'm okay with
Okay, so they are ninth. The first.
They have a lot of problems.
Carmen and I.
And
I don't know her. I just read her her background.
You don't want to do that. No.
I'm good with the first three.
So all we wanted to.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
Should we have a discussion on Carmen Navalis?
No.
No.
We have eight.
I'm good.
Okay.
We've reached eight, and then we'll just cut her off there. Unless, Laura, do you?
No. Barbara Gaines has been making the trek from Antelope Valley to Laco. I mean, that's a long, to the LACSTA meetings. And I know they have their own trustee organization, so she seems kind of dedicated, but mm-hmm. I'm fine with the others.
Just those eight.
Yeah.
Okay, those eight.
One, two, three. Well, okay, let's go. I'm just curious to know what I'm voting on. One,
two, three,
yeah,
seven,
uh-huh,
eight,
nine,
12 and 13, and then
12 and 13.
That's eight.
Okay.
So one being Mary
Figueroa. Yeah, she's calling out the numbers that were on the list.
So what's next?
Well, you have a motion to take the vote. Now you have a motion to confirm those eight.
Okay. May I have
another motion to confirm those eight?
Move to confirm the eight that we've discussed.
Second.
1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9, 12, and 13 on the list of candidates.
Okay. Moved by Dr. Baca and seconded by Trustee Bader. Those in favor, please say aye. Oh, student trustee.
I concur.
All right. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Okay. We recommended the eight of them. Action item passes. Discussion item. Annual review of board policy 2015 student member. Page 85 and 86. Any discussion?
So this is the annual. So this is the annual review of the authorities and privileges granted to the student trustee. You can see the ones that are available under the law. You can see our existing policy. So you would discuss whether you wanted to make any change in the existing privileges assigned to the student member. If so, we would bring that as an action item to the next meeting. Otherwise, we would not.
Colleagues.
Well, Betty, do you want to make any comments? Since it's what you've been working under.
So I noticed that it says privilege to attend closed sessions other than closed sessions on personal or collective bargaining matters. Do we ever have a closed session that isn't on personal or collective bargaining matters? Or have we ever had a closed session that doesn't include that?
Yes, the closed sessions on legal matters. For example, the citizen's lawsuit. It isn't on personnel matters or labor matters.
And the student trustee can't attend to those? I mean, I can see why, but has it ever been extended to a student trustee? Like, have you ever just tried it out for a year to just see how it would?
Not in my 20 years of experience.
I guess can I have a reason? Can I get some explanation, some background as to why?
Well, again, they're obviously on issues having to do with litigation. And I mean, first, when some of these reviews come up on personnel matters, you know, we're talking about the employees of the college.
She wouldn't be in personnel.
Yeah, she wouldn't be in personnel issues, but there are other litigation issues. In some of those cases, we could have some discussions about political actors, political people who are, you know, in our environment, let's say in the Walnut case, et cetera, et cetera. I could see where if in a piece of litigation that's ongoing over an extended period of time, and some of these cases probably will extend over years, some people in the room might be hesitant to make, you know, completely candid and open comments about all the actors who were involved in the process if they knew that some of the people sitting around the table weren't going to be there the next year, et cetera. I'm just thinking about the sensitivity of the confidentiality of the discussions we might have about, you know, people who've got issues with our college in terms of how we're running it. And we are, frankly, into a more litigious environment here right now than I've ever seen, and will probably ever see in my experience on the board. And some of these things are going to go on for a number of years. So I think board members will want to have confidence that whatever they say about these cases and the people involved will be privileged information and will not come back to them in some other way. I'm just speculating about this, but that would be something that would be possibly of concern to me, particularly for conflicts that extend over a long period of time. That's just kind of my thinking off the cuff, but others might have a different point of view.
I was just going to say, you probably, in most cases, you insert yourself into closed session, there's a possibility that you could be deposed because you're part of, you know, at that point, you're aware of, confidential information. So just probably something you don't want to do because you would be possibly brought into something that you probably don't want to, because then you'd have to sit in front of some people for a long time and answer weird questions, but that's just my opinion on that. So.
Well, that was one of my, being an attorney, I know if you are present at that moment in the discussion, we're creating a legal liability for you. Whoever is in the presence of the room and possibilities, deposition and all that. Trustee, we are here, at least we have 4 years, and then even if we are not on the board, we still can be deposed for that matter. But you'd be, students, a lot of you are going to be moving on, you know, to your career. So I think not to burden you with a serious legal situation, I think that will probably be a good rationale behind it. As the legal standpoint,
you would be named at that point. You would probably be named in the lawsuit along with other board members if you're receiving confidential information or privileged information.
I have one other quick question. Since we're talking, if we're done with that, if we're done with that part of the discussion.
I would just make the comment that maybe at times the. You know, the student's perspective might be valuable. So that's my only comment.
Well, my question was something different. And that is, I just didn't skimming this, I didn't see anything about a requirement that the student trustee must vote first before everyone else. And I wondered if that made you a little uncomfortable. It wasn't always that way. When I was first on the board, everyone would say, you know, I, and the student trustee would say, I concur, or I abstain or something. And it wasn't a separate thing that we had to, that the president has to remember and call on the student trustee first. And the student trustee must say something before anybody else does. Not that you would necessarily be influenced by what everybody else says, but I just wondered why we do that and if we need to continue to do that.
And that's at my direction, because the law refers to the student vote as an advisory vote.
Mm-hmm.
So an advisory vote that takes place after the matter is decided does not meet the spirit of the law.
Hmm. Okay.
No advisory if it's all done.
I actually like that it's first, because I feel like if I were to ever vote against something, I'd kind of be intimidated if you guys voted first.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Didn't know if you liked it or not.
Any other discussion on this item? If not,
we're done.
Meeting adjourned. We have
adjourned to closed session.
Adjourned to closed session.
And this is a closed session where only I will represent the district.
We're staying in this room, really.
The rest of you.
Back.
And
Denise,
it's up to
you're
you.
Gonna call the.
We can stay here.
We're going.
I'd rather go in there.
She doesn't think it's private.
Okay. So let's go.
We're going to go to the.
Yeah.